So hello and welcome once again to Rock and Roll, joined as always by Ryan. Ray, how are you doing? Just about to make the big journey home. I mean, it sounds a bit like Homeward Bound. Just about to make the big journey home back to Wales this week. How are you doing?
Yeah, just getting a little bit of a break from all the packing and the sorting out, mate. Leaving at 3 o'clock in the morning. Hopefully going to be local about 10:30, 11 in the morning. So fingers crossed there's no traffic and there's no idiots fucking gluing themselves to the floor like has been happening recently in and around London. And hopefully I can have a smooth journey through.
You don't have to worry about that. The further the values you get, the less people there are concerned about things like insulation. They're more concerned about where they can get a kind of special brew or something on a Tuesday morning. You'll be fine.
Or they end up sniffing the glue as opposed to using it to stick themselves to the floor.
It's like Twin Town. And also joining us this week, the man, my long COVID brain, has had me having a conversation today calling him Owen for 10 minutes before someone said, I thought his name was Will. His name is Will. It's Will Owens. How are you doing, Will?
Yeah, good, thank you. I mean, my name is still Owen, so you were technically correct.
Yeah.
You know, you could have done worse. You could have called me Robbie or something, which, believe me, has happened.
But even Robbie doesn't call himself Robbie.
No, that's true. That's true. So I suppose that's more of an excuse for people to get it confused. I think that has happened before where somebody's thought that Squidge's name is Squidge and his brother's name is Robbie. I think that has happened before, so...
Well, I'm obviously everything that I do around rugby, even when I'm coaching, I'm playing, everyone calls me Grav.
Mm.
And now I've started doing a horror podcast as well with someone who's called Gav.
Ah.
And it's got very confusing for me at times when I'm doing emails or dealing with DMs. And then I go, no, I'm not Gav. I'm Steph. So that, names have been bothering me this week of all the things that I thought COVID might do.
Sure.
Forgetting my own name. Wasn't up there on them, but there we go. That's the way it is.
Sorry if this has been asked on air before and I might have missed this. Where did the whole Grav nickname for you come from?
My lethargy, where I didn't, obviously I've still got a beard anyway, but I didn't shave my beard and I didn't get a haircut.
Right.
And I turned up for training and they were short of a centre. And I went, I'll fill in at centre while we're training. And Grav, like a young Ray Gravel was the thing. And so I stuck ever since.
Nice,
and
that's good.
And you're also a Scarlets fan, so there's a link there as well.
If anyone calls you Grav around rugby, even if it's just for non-rugby reasons, I'm not going to say no.
Yeah. Of course. You're going to make that stick.
Don't you call me Grav. I'm going to have my name printed on the back of a shirt.
So when I was younger, because obviously I've grown up as a Welsh exile playing in Nottingham, and I used to, in my sort of teenage years, I was like by far the worst player on my team, and like I was the smallest player, and basically I was put on the wing because I couldn't catch or tackle. And there was once where I miraculously caught the ball, did a great sidestep and scored, and somebody said, oh yeah, Shane Williams. And the very next week we went on a tour with nicknames printed on the back, and I had Shane on the back of mine, and obviously I tried to make that stick. And then so we occasionally had new people join the club who thought my name was actually Shane, which I was delighted with.
Well, we've got someone as well who's pretty nippy, and so he claims he looked a bit like Billy Elliot back, and so they started calling him Billy Wiz. And now he's put on a bit of weight and he's not scored as many tries as he was, and so he's now known as Billy Was. So
that's great, because usually there's pressure with nicknames like that, but yeah. Sometimes you get somebody who is very quick on it. That's great.
Yeah, Billy Was is one of my favourite nicknames. Right up here with, I don't know if I've said this one on a podcast, I know a guy called Terry who's a policeman.
Yeah, I was about to say, this is a class one.
He's about 5 foot and a bit, and so he's nicknamed Laptop. Because he's a small PC.
Oh, that's very good.
The cleverest nickname I've heard around my rugby club. So
that's excellent. Yeah. It's a good thing his first name's not Mac.
Right. Shall we dive into a bit of news?
Let's go.
Sure.
Here's this week's news. So, starting us off, Will, something that you've really taken an interest in is something that we beat the drum about quite a lot as of late. Wales women,
yep.
Some big announcements finally a move forward to a system, a setup that looks far more professional, dare I use the word, than what we've had in place previously.
Yeah, it's like, obviously the calls have been put in for ages to try and make it a lot more professional for the women, whether that's coming to training facilities or coaching staff or just like getting them paid, etc. But yeah, it's a great step. I think it was only something like 10 days, maybe 2 weeks ago, it was announced that they were going to have a performance centre based at Principality Stadium, use obviously Cardiff Arms Park as their training base, and use and have things like gym facilities, etc., put into the stadium. And miraculously, they're already using it. So obviously, that's very, very good commitment from the union that started straight away. I know, obviously, it's only a small step at the beginning, but it's certainly something that is a step in the right direction. I know they've played, obviously, New Zealand yesterday as well, in a bit of a warm-up, more for New Zealand, I suppose, than it was for us. I think it was two lots of half an hour, I think, they played. And from what I saw, obviously, the little clip that was put on from Black Ferns and, obviously, WYU put something on afterwards, it was all done in good spirits and, obviously... hashtag rugby values, I suppose, were actually used yesterday, and sort of it was all great to see that the girls were obviously probably in a more professional environment than they normally used to. Adding to that as well, the fact that they've confirmed the coaching staff for the World Cup and they're there for 12 months at least, there's a bit of sort of stability for them to look forward to, sort of go ahead and build into that World Cup later on in the year.
Yeah, you've stole away right out of my mouth here with stability. I think that's what all they've really asked for and wanted. For a little while, light at the end of the tunnel, Will?
Yeah, and like, I mean, it's one of those things that it's watching the world's women play is kind of infuriating, because you so often see really talented players that have the potential to go very far, and you can always tell that there is something further down the line that's maybe prevented them from playing at the very top level, or let's say top level, no, playing internationally, but maybe progressing and winning a Six Nations or something at some point, you know, which has
competing
to be the goal.
The top teams.
Absolutely, yeah. And like, you know, I'm really excited to see England play against the Black Ferns this autumn. I really wish it was Wales. I was getting excited to play against the Black Ferns, you know, yeah. And that will come. And I love this week hearing Josh Adams talking about he said Jasmine Joyce is the best player in the world, and like, that is a brilliant, bold statement, and from, you know, one of the best wingers in the men's game talking about, you know, one of the best wingers, if not the best players in the women's game, and name dropping that and saying, you know, this is a player I love to learn from, I love to look watch a play and stuff like that. And I think that's a great statement, and it's great seeing the Welsh men's team actually giving a bit of a leg up to the women's team, because I think they do need it, you know. And it's, as you say, it's one of those things that we need to normalise in order to get some sort of stability, as you were saying, Ryan, in the WU's sort of women's programme.
Mm-hmm. I would have thought that international sprinter Nigel Walker brought that forward for us, though, right?
Yes, yeah. And like, it's great to see that Nigel Walker's only been in there for, you know, a matter of weeks, and it's great to see that he's already making some strides.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's a worry that we always see with, I was going to say the WU, but let's be fair, like, rugby unions. It's quite often, it's always been sort of jobs for the boys. People have come in from a professional background and then they don't really want to shake up the alcohol car too much. So they make one or two changes that don't really do a lot.
Yeah.
And then they just sit in their hot seat for a little bit and leave things tick over. He's come in, he's ruffled feathers, he shook things up.
He looks serious about this.
He wants results, and it's absolutely brilliant to see. I know we've praised him the last sort of few podcasts of what he's doing there. But it doesn't look like he's letting up. It's brilliant. I'm absolutely loving it. And he said, we're a long way yet from the kind of setups that the biggest nations in the world have got in the women's game. But it's all about taking those first steps. It's all about taking the putting the foundations in place. And it's great. It's absolutely brilliant to see us doing it.
I think the other massive positive for me is in regards to like who the coaches are, not necessarily just as well the fact that they are coaches. Like, they've both had fairly successful careers in the men's game with their coaching as well. And it's good to see that there's not a case of like somebody that's, I suppose, whether you're a male or female rugby player in Wales, you're going to know Geraint Lewis and you're going to know how well he did internationally, and you're going to know how well he's done coaching wise. And the same for Ewan Cunningham. Like, you're going to have that respect. Like, if it was a case of where they appointed somebody that maybe was only known in the women's game, that may have been a bit more beneficial to the women, but maybe wouldn't bring the wider audience into it and like have that genuine sort of respect that actually they're serious about this and they're going to go ahead with it.
Cunningham's such a good appointment, I think, because like in a way you can say that he was maybe unlucky not to have some kind of wider involvement in the Wales men's team.
Yeah.
So I think giving him that promotion and saying, look, you can have the job that you could have had with the men's team, but a bit higher with the women's team is a really, really smart promotion. And you know, for both parties, both for Cunningham and for the team, I think that he's going to really, really set out clearly what he wants from the team, and he's going to have really high standards, which he's going to drive, and the team will definitely be able to live up to that. I think it's a really great appointment.
Yeah, and fingers crossed, hopefully all goes well. I'll get to watch their last game against Canada, because that's the day after the Aussie game.
Oh, nice.
Home for that. So fingers crossed I can get double header in.
Yeah, it's great to see those steps forward. It is a small step at the minute, but to see those things in place, to see the facilities within the stadium, the gym and everything I've seen inside of it, it's good stuff. It's great to say, and that does change a mentality, I think, as well, that when you're training in elite facilities with that, you know, are used by elite players and elite teams, which as much as they've struggled on the international stage for obvious reasons, they are elite level players, and so let's treat them that way. So
yeah,
it's absolutely great to see. Also news out this week that I forgot to dwell in was Tom Young's obviously taking a break away from the game indefinitely, looking after his wife. Obviously, it's not the first time that Tom's had to take a little bit of time off. Sometimes things are a bit bigger than rugby. It's definitely one of those times. Just from me, just wanted to send out, you know, support and a few words to Tom. Anything the new boys want to add?
Just echo that, mate. It's just a sad situation to see. Obviously, we go back to, what was it, 2017, was it? When he was ill and Ben dropped out of the Lions tour, which he was ill. So obviously, it's not been great at all. Obviously, it's just a thought to them, like Steph, you know yourself. Like, I've got lots of links with cancer myself and my family, so it's always touches a heart when things like that happen. And just want to add to that, it's a slightly different subject, but obviously, thoughts and wishes to the family of Sean Wainui. Obviously, hearing that earlier this week as well is just shocking. Whenever I've seen sort of him play or just him sort of sound bites and stuff, I've seemed like a genuinely great bloke as well. So just commiserations there and condolences to them.
Yeah, I want to echo that as well. I think for starting on Sean Wainui, you know, it's like such a brilliant player to watch at Super Rugby sort of level. I didn't know much about him as a person until obviously his passing, and learning about that through the week, the stuff that's been posted has been amazing. Regarding Ben Youngs, I've got nothing but respect for the Youngs family. The fact that Ben has given up two Lions tours for the sake of his family and, you know, like, people's health and stuff like that, like I think that's brilliant. And again, Tom has given up so much just for the sake of his wife and his family, and you know, firstly, fair play to them, but I know that that's not the consolation. The consolation is just hopefully, you know, that Tom's wife is okay, and that everybody works out okay in the end, you know.
Yeah, so all the best to Tom, to Ben and to Tiffany, obviously, and hopefully we'll get some good news again soon.
Yeah.
And we'll be able to leave that behind them. And so on to some equally shitty news in a completely different way. So we're going to dive in 2 feet fucking first, as we usually do on this podcast. We're not one to step around issues. It's reared its head again, a few articles in support of Paddy Jackson. So there was the wording of one in particular that got me wound up this week. But it's not the first time we've seen this, let's say, fawning over Paddy Jackson, which considering his past, we're looking at a rape case, we're looking at racism in that the photo from 2012. It seems a bit of a fucking joke that we seem to be sitting through a lot of articles now, whether it be to get clicks from some people or whether some people are just willing to overlook a dubious past in order for him to get that call. The calls for him to play for Ireland again have surfaced, with the articles that usually come out with regards to this, with everything that comes with it, there's usually a tide of misogyny, for want of, no, not for want of, that's what it is, a tide of misogynistic assholes on Twitter that tend to then attack people who show any sort of defiance against those articles or point out this past. So we know people who've tweeted things this week and suffered a bit of a backlash. The majority of the people who have suffered a backlash, surprisingly, are female. So any women who've tweeted about this in a rugby sense, in particular, obviously Patricia has come on this program numerous times, come on this podcast numerous times, massive Irish fan, yeah. A huge depth of rugby knowledge, far greater than mine, especially when it comes to Irish rugby.
Yeah, agreed. Same.
She's brilliant, Patricia. Yeah,
absolutely superb. And then how quickly she's belittled, abused, and attacked as soon as she comments on anything like this is a sign of the mentality of a lot of the people who are defending him. So, well, let's talk to you first. How are you feeling?
Right, I'm gonna look at this as two completely different subjects. Yeah, everything that's gone in his past, I'll get to in a minute, but the calls for him to become or get chosen for Ireland again, there is easily five, maybe six tens in Ireland that are better than him anyway. So I don't understand that call. Like, you go Sexton could be another 10 years older. It could be 46, 47, and he'd still be better than Paddy Jackson. Like,
that's 10 years younger than he is now, isn't it? 46, 47.
like, you add into that, like, Billy Burns, you add into that...
Joey Carberry.
I'd even go as far as saying
Jack Carty,
Madigan and Hanrahan, even Carty, like all of those players, both Byrne brothers, are better than Paddy Jackson as a 10. So, like, taking away everything else, those articles to as clickbait to try and get him back as 10 for Ireland, I don't think he's playing that well anyway to be, one, if he was playing in Ireland, to be chosen, and two, he's not playing in Ireland, so he won't be chosen. Like, I don't understand why people... I know some people have to fill columns, I guess, but I don't understand why people are calling for it, ignoring everything else he's done when he's not as good as the ones that are there. And I'm sure there'll probably be fly-offs in the 20s that are better than him as well. So I just don't understand
This is the thing as well, sticking on the solely rugby matter, right? If there was an outstanding player, as Johnny Sexton was while he wasn't playing in Ireland, I can see why they would change the laws to fit him into their team. Yep. Everyone's got that player that they're willing to fit in. Even the All Blacks changed their rules because they wanted Dan Carter playing. Yep. And so I went, actually, that's a sabbatical. He's not going to France. It looks like he's playing in France. He's taking a sabbatical. So everyone's got that player. He ain't it. Like, he's not the player that you're going to break your rules for.
That's it. So, first off, before I comment on any of this, I'm aware that I am associated with one of these sites that has, you know, sent out one of these things. And I would like to say that, firstly, Paddy Jackson is an arsehole. And secondly, a conversation has been had involving me and somebody. I can't go into any more details about that. But yeah, anyway, to carry on your point there, Ryan, that's so spot on. So I was talking to my brother about this. And he made the very good point that Ireland don't pick outside of their own four provinces. And so, like you're saying, Steph, like you'd have to break a rule. And every time BT Sport bring up, oh yeah, Paddy Jackson, should he be expecting an Ireland recall this autumn? They fail to then consider, oh, why is he not in the Irish squad in the first place? Because he's not playing in Ireland. Why is he not playing in Ireland? Because of this court case, the fact he's a racist, he's a misogynist, he sent those texts, which, even if we ignore the whole, oh, not guilty versus innocent thing or whatever, we know that Paddy Jackson is a shitty person, right? Even if you ignore all of that, because you've got all of those stupid texts he sent, that stupid group chat, and the rest of it, right? That what we do know of the story, the stuff that we definitely know did happen, right? So that it's a choice for BT Sport every time they bring up, should Paddy Jackson play in the Ireland team? It's a choice for them to deliberately ignore that, because they know, and they're consciously thinking of the fact that that is the reason why he is not playing for Ireland, the reason why he's not playing in Ireland, the reason why he can't play in Ireland. It is a choice for them to bring that up. It's a choice for them to just ignore that it's misogynistic. It simply is. Yeah, and it's infuriating to think about that. And it's honestly, it's awful that a company like BT Sport they've got a policy, clearly, like somewhere it's written in the contract that they can't talk about Paddy Jackson in a bad light, that they can't talk about, you know, his past or anything like that, that they have to solely focus on the rugby. And I get that it's not nice to talk about, right? Like, you know, I know that none of the three of us are enjoying talking about this, but it's kind of got to be done. But it's on them to address the fact that, or at least don't try and praise him as some kind of godlike figure, you know?
Yeah, I 100% agree. And like you say, even if it's not, it's difficult, especially with a daytime audience, to have a frank discussion about why he's not.
Absolutely.
But they should be at least alluded to that. The conversation should be had of people know he's got a background, he's got a history. Even if it's brought up in terms of we live, like it or not, in a world built on capitalism, even if you bring in the fact that Guinness fucking separated themselves off from London Irish, as soon as that happened, Guinness said, well, if this is going to happen...
And many other sponsors.
But can you imagine sort of an Irish team making that decision, especially at a time when things are not stable, finances are difficult. We've just gone on the back of a pandemic. We've been in a lockdown for far too long. Ireland have suffered perhaps a little bit more than we have even in terms of lockdowns.
Yeah.
For them to suddenly go, well, you know what? Let's forget one of our biggest sponsors and potentially pissing off all our other sponsors. Let's call back a third or fourth choice fly half that we can have cover for us and forget all about the dubious things. And the fact that he split a nation, like sort of, people out in the streets demonstrating outside a courthouse, literally two sides arguing with each other in the street outside court. He's divided a nation. I don't think the IRFU were the ones that go, should we call him back up and let's see what happens?
The fact that, and again, like I'm gonna just straight up look at people like BT Sport about this, right? Because frankly, what they're doing by just ignoring that and just thinking, do you think anyone will notice if we pretend that we don't, you know, never acknowledge that ever happened, you know, it's straight up enabling, because all they're focusing on is the fact that he's part of their London Irish's leadership group, and which is mental in itself. The fact that Nick Phibbs can be the second most dislikable person in a club's leadership group is mental to me. But anyway, the fact that all they focus on is, oh, he's this great guy who drives standards and, you know, can kick a ball far. They talk about him as this amazing, you know, heroic leader. It is straight up enabling idiots who hold those misogynistic and racist values.
Absolutely. Walt, you had a second point. Which I'm not sure if I pissed over.
The second point was just going on to everything that used to was just discussed. That's just like taking everything from one side to the other. Like, he's not good enough as a rugby player to even get an Ireland squad. Whether he's done what he's done or not. Like at the end of the day, he shouldn't be in that team for. Well, he shouldn't. My opinion, he probably shouldn't be playing rugby, let alone in that team.
Agree.
But that's for others to decide, obviously, in regards to the court of law. I know he was made not guilty, et cetera, et cetera, even though a lot of the evidence appears to point to the fact that that isn't the case. But yeah, I just think, like, I think you just made the point there, Will. It's like they're enabling purely because they're forgetting the fact that, or not forgetting, or intentionally.
They're making
not
a choice to forget,
Yeah. They're making that choice to forget, in inverted commas, that everything that's gone on, to try and make a bit of clickbait with videos for online or Twitter or other people to write
100%.
Other people to write articles and stuff, purely by them mentioning it. But like, just to pick you up on a point, Steph, I think you mentioned third or fourth choice. He's probably more like eighth or ninth. So,
I mean, if he was within the squad, he would be third or fourth choice. But I think that an important point as well that both of you have touched on is this idea that, yeah, people always throw out on Twitter, well, he was found not guilty. That doesn't necessarily mean you didn't do something.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's it. And especially when you look at the time in Northern Ireland, the startup was 1.8% of reported rape cases ended in a guilty verdict.
And the thing is,
98.2% of people who report rape get absolutely no thing at the end. So
And even though, you know, it goes without saying, but obviously I believe her, right? But even if we ignore that for a second, even if we ignore the whole case and the verdict and everything, we still have a lot of evidence that he is a shitty person, right? Which I know isn't an arrestable offence, right? But God damn, that guy should not be playing, you know, in an elevated position in the Premiership.
And obviously, we've talked in the past about the All Blacks and the players that they've continued to pick. And obviously, one of those players was dealt with in a very similar fashion with Irish rugby. That as soon as that domestic abuse case came out, he was dropped like a piece of shit that he was and sent fucking packing, only for New Zealand to pick him up and put him in their first team. Now, no doubts about it, he's a good player and he's certainly a better player than Paddy Jackson ever
Of
fucking
course
will
he is,
be.
yeah.
But Ireland have set the precedent, and to be fair to them, like for all the shit we give well, they give everyone, let's be honest, we give our own teams enough shit on you, but for all the shit we give Ireland, they've dealt with both of them in a really good way. And
Yeah,
said, well, actually,
100%.
we're gonna wash our hands with these people
And
because we don't want anything to do with them.
how laughable is it looking at the All Blacks literally saying, almost quoting word for word, with Shannon Frizzell, we take domestic violence very seriously, which is why we're giving him a two-match ban from playing this game where you throw around a rubbery spherical object, you know? Like, what a piss take that is.
I suppose though,
So,
I was going to say, I don't know if you're going to move on, Steph, but it was a case of like that for me. On the flip side to BT, like they've got this massively wrong. But in a segue, I think another point we're going to be making in regards to the pod, like, is the recent conversations they've had around like Exeter, and obviously the recent discussion they've had on the Rugby Tonight program, etc. as well, which in my opinion is completely like is a 180, whereas I think they handle it brilliantly to have a discussion like that on a program like that. And they came in for a lot of shit in regards to like why is it being done, why is it not rugby on there, blah blah blah. And it's like contradicting themselves in a way where they're happy to have a conversation a positive way about one subject but not about the other and try and
yeah,
promote the other side of things, which doesn't really
it's a really good
sit
point.
well. Yeah.
An effortless thing, like a job on the one show beckons, the way you jump from one subject to the next, it was seamless. I'm proud of you, man. It's Alex Jones, who I should be waiting for you on the Seven Bridge for when you come back tomorrow.
I hope she is, mate.
The second Seven Crossing, we won't call it the other name. It's never the other name. Let's go into that and let's blend one into the other, because it is great to see BT have this conversation, but even in this case, it's like finally have this conversation, because it's not like this is a new thing. And I know it's built up now to a point where people say, but even the past year or two, people have been contacting BT. People have been saying, I mean, one of the little stings that come on before, I was up like 2 o'clock in the morning watching UFC, on a little sting come on. It's a guy in a headdress with BT Sport across the front. So people can say, well, why you let them still pay the tomahawk chop? But they're still actively promoting people wearing, as it happens, I don't think it was an Exeter fan. I think it was a fan of a football team, possibly in Germany. But they're still putting that on there and then put it on there before I have it for fucking rugby tonight, ironically. So they've left it long enough to address this themselves, because this should have been addressed a long, long time ago.
I agree.
But
Like,
I think, go on.
no.
So obviously, I've given BT Sport a lot of shit and what I was just talking about, and you know, better late than never. C credit where it's due. You know that they have actually addressed this. You know that we've not really seen this on telly before, that they've actually discussed stuff like this, which does need to be addressed. And the first way to get something like this, you know, get the right action done, is for somebody to call them out on television. You know, and I'm sure that some conversations will have gone on behind the scenes at Exeter after seeing, you know, this whole feature on Rugby Tonight, and especially like the representative from Wasps who spoke brilliantly, and then the two women that they had on who were fantastic in all of the questions they threw at them and open-minded and everything. And that, you know, hopefully that will help spark a conversation where Exeter will actually do something proactive.
Well, I didn't watch the whole game myself, but I'm pretty sure somebody said that they actually didn't have the chant on whenever they scored on the game at the weekend, I believe. They changed it to different music. I think somebody said
I
one of the
did definitely hear it at some point
Oh,
on
okay,
the
so
fixture, definitely when they came out, but
I think Hogg scored a try, I think, and
right.
they played the John Cena music and not.
Oh, they did. Yes, they did.
Yeah, so it wasn't like it wasn't after every score they normally where they normally play it. There was an amendment to it.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. Yeah, which is is good. It's a step in the right direction, but hopefully they can go the whole way in time.
Well, this and like you said, we've given BT Sport some shit. To be fair, they've done well for rugby broadcasting. They have touched on some really difficult issues.
Yeah,
they've looked at concussion in the past. They've looked at the Pacific Island players.
Rugby coverage is great.
What's that?
Their rugby coverage is definitely great. Like,
yeah, and it's far better than what Sky were putting out. I would say,
For sure,
before they had the rights, and so I'm not gonna say that BT is shit and thing, but by the same token, if you take on this game and you take it with its faults as well, and they're a big part of that, because when you're putting that much money into the game, you suddenly become a power in what that game does. And so I think BT do have a thing to say, well, actually, we're not going to support this. So either something changes you, or we have got money elsewhere, and you can find something for yourself. It is great to see that finally touching on it. Just, like I say, despite their regular sort of masturbating over England back rows, the output they're generally worth listening to. And so to see it, and not sort of tucked away on some minor program where they will do a little thing about it, on Rugby Tonight, and it was the main thing for Rugby Tonight. There was almost nothing else.
Yeah,
it was half hour full of that, and then who's Eddie Jones going to pick in for the autumn tests?
Yeah,
so it was great for it to get that main billing. As you said, Leandra and Jen were both superb on there. They fantastically well.
So I loved that. So obviously they said a couple of times that, I'm not sure how well you follow the Premiership or Exeter Chiefs and so on. I think it was Jen on there who dropped the bombshell at the end. Like, no, I watch the Premiership every week. I watch Exeter Chiefs. It does have an impact on, my culture, seeing people who are mocking us, I think it was great that she dropped that bombshell.
Well, yeah, and Leandra had said when people asked the question, how is it affecting people over in America? And she said, well, we're not over in America because I live in England, and there's a new community of people who've moved over, First Nations people who no longer live in America and Canada, because we're all living over here and we've all got in contact and we're all friends. And one of the things we do is watch rugby together. And so, it's a big... And this is where I think people don't think about it. Like, people always think of it being sort of this Hollywood version of them all sort of sat on reserves, and it's all just one group of people. And if they're not doing that, they're in casinos because that's all. They're real life people. Like, it's just a numerous races of people living a normal life. And I don't think people can get that through their fucking heads.
Yeah.
And this is what they are.
And the other thing that really, really annoys me is when you get idiots on fucking Twitter, and some of which are other podcasters that will mention their names, that they turn around and say things like, but it's not racist. Or they'll say things like, why are we talking about this on a rugby program? Like, this is not about rugby. And the way I see it is, well, if somebody from that race, whether it's in regards to colour or somebody of like that ethnicity thinks it's racist, then it's racist, even if one person thinks it. And if somebody who's like a middle-aged white man from wherever looks at it and goes, I don't think it is, well, then he's wrong. Like, it is racist if one person thinks it.
Two come on and say, this is offensive, it's kind of like, great, like, end of conversation,
Well, that's one of the things, obviously, they've always hidden behind, is, first of all, that these people don't think it's racist, so it's fine. And then despite the letter that's come in, and now we've got two people on telly on a rugby programme, it's completely racist.
Yeah.
And we don't like it. And we're not happy with it. And it's causing a massive issue within First Nations communities where sort of suicide is high and people are suffering a lot with depression because they feel trapped. They're not seen as real people almost. And so, like you said, for them to stand up and go, well, actually, no, we're you and we're telling you now live. Like, you can watch us telling you, specifically you watching me saying that it doesn't exist, that we don't like it, we don't want it.
Yeah.
We don't see it as an honour. Which, by the way, the most fucking gammon white man thing to say, oh, it's a real honour. It's a real honour that we honoured. No, they don't really give a fuck about your club. The honour was the fact that these people were given addresses, like the same way, like they love war, these fucking middle-aged gammony face men. So, you know, those men come back from war with medals or they earn them all. If you had seen someone walking around the street who just have fucking loads of war medals on and you went, what the fuck are you doing? This is a similar thing. These people have earned these medals by being good people and great people. It's just
that so they well put. Yeah.
People we do, and now you're fucking mocking them by wearing them to a rugby match.
And like the people who say like, oh yeah, why can't we just talk about sport instead? It's like, if we get this conversation out of the way, we can talk a hell of a lot more about sport later. You know, we could just focus on the fact that Exeter Chiefs are a brilliant team. You know, if the Chiefs in Exeter Chiefs was more like Waikato Chiefs rather than, you know, mocking Native Americans.
And that's the thing, like, the question was asked on it, like, do they need to change the name? I think the longer it goes on, the more that may become an issue. Because if it becomes an issue for long enough, then I don't know if you can separate the two. Whereas at the moment, if they kept the name Chiefs, but went, actually, we're just going to rebrand, we're going to change the badge, we're going to drop all the fucking nonsense that goes with it, and we're going to make it something that's more suitable to the area and look at our history, that'll be completely fine, normal, okay, and people will go back to actively liking the Chiefs. People should be actively liking Exeter, given what they do on a rugby pitch.
Yeah.
Despite all the shit they get about how they're forwards based as well, they actually play some nice rugby. They've come from fucking nowhere to become European champions, and everyone loves an underdog.
With the same head coach, like...
With the same head coach and the same thing, and sort of players that were there in the early days stuck around, and they were playing for a lot into the Premiership and then coaching, and they followed it through, and they have built a good sort of family club. And then went, we know you didn't mean to upset people when you did this. It's just it's dated kind of badly. So can we just change that? And they've gone, fuck off and take your 5G with you. Like, you come across as a bit of an arsehole. So maybe you just needed to change the attitude. But for me, the longer that they stick with it, the more that the name becomes an issue as well, because it becomes harder to separate the name from the entity. And so I just do it. But it does feel like the tide is changing. Like they've lost the Wender sponsors. They're now sponsored by, as we said, a patch of mud is their main sponsor, because there's not even anything built on that yet. On the
which
on
is owned by like one of the big dogs at Exeter, isn't it? But isn't it owned by Tony Rowe? Yeah,
it's still owned by Tony Rowe. So
which is embarrassing.
But they've got literally hundreds of sponsors waiting to sponsor them.
Yeah, and yet they've got Tony Rowe's backyard written on the front of their jersey.
Tony Rose mud patch.
What they need to do is change the name to a name that's like, I don't know, synonymous with like being world class athletes and fantastic rugby players. Maybe become like Exeter Blues or something, because obviously there's not many Blues anymore, is there? So
we've lost one Blues. First, they can pick one back up.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, I can't think of anything worse. Imagine their Twitter. It'd be quiet, because not everyone will go on 5G to comment, but bloody hell. Shall we, speaking of the Blues and not Blues and rugbies and whatever else we've got in thrown at this, shall we move on to a little bit of regional rugby from this weekend?
Let's do it.
Well, you're going to be on a high. We'll start with you, and then... We'll end with me. Well, you won at least. Shut up.
Yeah, we won. And
you rugby fans and you rugby's fans are never happy, right? No, you can't win games. You complain. You're winning games. You're complaining.
It was more the case of like, I thought early on, Dragons battered us. Like it was. It genuinely felt really early that this could be like an embarrassing loss for Cardiff at home to the Dragons, which doesn't not necessarily happen. Like, I was convinced, like, bonus point, the whole lot, we'd be terrible. And then there was a little bit of brilliance from Lloyd Williams, obviously after he'd had his yellow card, to set up that try for Halime Moss. Blues obviously getting to the lead. And then, surprisingly, when we went down to 14 men, which was by a spot on, like, definite red card, we just shut up shop, and the Dragons, although they scored a try and potentially had a second that was then disallowed for contact in the air, like, the Dragons didn't really have a chance to get back at us. Like, it was a case of, like, it was like watching a game of rugby that Cardiff Blues or Cardiff Rugby were playing in, but it felt as though it was a defence, somebody like Leinster, that you knew they weren't going to lose. Like, when they were down to 14 men, it was a case of, like, hang on. Like, once Ray Lilo got sent off, it was as if, like, 14 Leinster players just came on the pitch and was just defending their line for their lives, as opposed to Cardiff Rugby, which normally we could have 20 players on the pitch and we know we're going to lose in the last minute. Like, that's how much when you look at it, it's never going to happen. So, yeah, I had a conversation before the game and I was, like, confident of a win, but I predicted, obviously, the Blues or Cardiff would finish lower than the Dragons this year. But yeah, it was a bit of a weird Saturday night to, like, enjoy the game. Glad we won, but it was a bit like, I know we should have lost that game because early on the Dragons should have won it. And had that try been loud for Ben Fry late on, I think they would have gone on and scored more and then beaten us by a little bit.
Well, I did, I would say fear, but you know, I never fear for Cardiff. I thought it might have been the end of it when Lilo got sent off. And yeah, I thought, well, this is the Dragons' chance to kick on now. And they never really did until late on and far too late on. The highlight of the game for me was Eddie Butler making the same mistake as you've made a couple of times within 10 seconds of kickoff. Taken it by the Blues, by Cardiff, or they used to be the Blues. And they,
oh, and I always do it.
Going, nobody cares.
He also called him Ross Turnbull at one point.
Yeah. What was the other game? I put it on our group chat. There was
at least he could have gotten Bill Turnbull, the guy off.
That's true.
I put it on our
Ross
group
Turnbull,
chat.
Ross Turnbull, is he a Chelsea goalkeeper?
Ross Turnbull used to be a Chelsea and Middlesbrough goalkeeper. Ross Turnbull has a Champions League winners medal, I believe.
Wow.
Like when Dean Mateo was the manager, I'm pretty sure.
Of course, synonymous with Josh Turnbull, who has technically, I think, three Grand Slams, but hasn't played a minute.
Yeah.
Oh, no, two Grand Slams in the Six Nations, but hasn't played a minute in any of those tournaments.
Yeah.
Do you think this is a thing with Turnbulls? Do you think all the
Must
Turnbulls...
Be.
Of medals from major competitions.
Yeah,
Called, but no actual input into the result.
Yeah. John Terry really should change his name to Turnbull.
I bet you Bill Turnbull of the BBC like has got a Davis Cup medal or something. And he was just stringing
He's got a golden boot sat in his toilet.
he was just Andy Murray's towel man and he's going...
Yeah, but going back to the game, you know, so the thing about Cardiff is when I look at like the Pro 14 or ULC rather, I'm doing an Eddie Butler here, fixtures for the weekend, I always look at Cardiff and I think, oh yeah, I think I'm most excited to watch them play this weekend. And then that always means I'm the most disappointed when they inevitably lose and get battered against like Edinburgh or something like that, because they know how to, for want of a better phrase, shit the bed against teams they should comprehensively beat. And they started to do that against the Dragons, but they just about... Luckily, games of rugby are only 80 minutes, because another 5 minutes and the Dragons might have had something else to say there, thanks to the incredible bit of pre-binding for the Joe Maximil try, which I love that was purely refereed on vibes, and I'm so here for it. I'm so glad that try was given, despite the fact that, you know, people have started talking about pre-binding now. But yeah, no, that was... It was a very entertaining game, and I'm also a big fan of the fact that Misaki Doge has scored another try, and that he's already got two for the Dragons, and that makes me very happy.
The little things. Well, this was a thing, because it's always one of those ones when a prop comes in and you go, is he going to be brilliant or is he going to be horrific? And he was one of those ones that I kind of felt that from, like, he could really come in and make a difference to the Dragons here, or he could come in and be utterly shit and not cope at all. Didn't have him down as a try-scoring machine.
Yeah, he is Fijian, though, so...
Well, this is true. And it's one of those ones, because the Blues, as they were then, were guilty of it in the past, where they went, let's build a better team, let's bring in a Pacific Island prop and a Scottish fly-off. And it's like, no, no, no. Like, but the world has changed.
Yeah,
Fijian props and Finn Russell, mate, everyone's changed their mind now.
Yeah,
I have to backtrack on that, because one of our best players ever was Fau Felice. So having a South Sea Islander prop was just amazing.
Very true. Fau
the
Felice
exception
is a legend
that proves the rule.
Yeah, but Campesi Mafu, however, dog shit.
Campesi Mafu, no comment.
But that's yeah, was... in his stint at the Blues, that was. He was very good for Nottingham afterwards, but yeah.
And then the curse of the Cardiff backs came back again. I think Max Llewellyn lasted, was it 14 minutes?
Oh, man, his luck is rotten, isn't it?
And, then Jason Harries.
And Jason Harries lasted half hour.
So the
which is still a lot longer than Priestland and Jared Evans lasted.
Yeah, but what it did do is it allowed the Ginger Dan Carter to come on to make his final appearance.
Very true. Very true. The GOAT.
The Ginger Dan Carter, or as he's more affectionately known, Splots Anta Daniil Jenkins.
And it also gave us the second biggest highlight of the game for me, of playing a game of which rugby players are named after animals.
Yeah.
That we played for what felt like a good hour.
Yeah, and I got pissed off that we couldn't play Josh Turnbull because apparently he's not part of the full name.
It's only part of the full name. It's not a full animal name. No, I think that's where we were taking out.
I'm going to be sporadically thinking of these whilst we're still recording. And at some point, I'm going to just blurt out a name. Yeah. So one of my favourite memories of Dan Fish ever was watching him play for the under-20s against France. And Ricochet was on the commentary. And Ricochet, you know, as you'll both remember, remarkable commentator. And the line he said was, "If Wales lose this, Fish will be gutted." Which just stuck with me.
Up there with the BBC's one last week of Beanbag's early try.
Yeah.
Which, oh.
Juan Manuel Cat, sorry. Juan Manuel Cat plays outside centre for Uruguay. Carry on.
I think I checked out on Todd Blackadder. I went old school.
You left
Todd Blackadder, then gone.
And then I got reminded about an hour after we'd finished playing the game that I could have used Ryan Lamb, and I didn't.
Of course.
And I didn't even think.
That's a good one. That is a good one. Yeah. Of course, if you want to go down the cat thing, you could have Camus Chat in there as well. You know, being the French for cat.
I think that was accepted.
There's been a few cats that have played women's rugby, and obviously being Welsh, you know, we get stuck on the cat. All different languages are cat. Yeah. How many different languages of cat have played rugby at a professional level? But all in all, are you happy?
Well,
with the Blues, not the animals.
Generally.
Have to be, because apparently we're like seventh in the league, aren't we? I think?
Well, yeah, as one of the top journalists in the country pointed out.
That's why I mentioned it.
There's two Welsh regions in the top seven, which is a random number to pick in a group of 16.
And then not to thing you heard, because obviously she's had a lot of shit this week, but then the reply we got from Patricia in regards to, like, that feels like when I finished, I got a bronze medal for finishing third in a race and there was only three of us. Like, it was that tweet from him, I won't mention his name because he doesn't deserve it, just doesn't make, like, he's just fishing for stuff. Like, there's no pan there, but he's just fishing for stuff. But also, the other thing that I did pick up this week was he's clearly moved on to his next love child, and he's gone from Kevin Sheedy to Max Nagy, because he was just tweeting stuff about him constantly and how he's going to be great and fantastic, and it's obviously that's going to be his next victim, I suppose.
I've lost my point there. I was going to say something, and I completely. But to be fair,
while we're here, I've just thought Grant Fox and Rudy Wolf both qualify for the Animals 15.
Good work.
I'm going to keep going. Don't think I'm going to stop here.
The All Blacks have been celebrating winning a two-horse race for years, though, with the Rugby Championship. So I don't think you can complain about
coming
bronze in a three-person race.
No.
So I think she's completely fine. So we'll move on to the Ospreys before I have my rant about Friday night's game. That's one hell of a result. That's one hell of a result, Will.
Yeah, no, it was very good. And there was something quite satisfying when at half time. So what we did in our household is we flicked over to the USA game against the All Blacks and then put the second half of the Ospreys game on, like, on a laptop. So you could see the USA getting decimated while the Ospreys were really, like, clinically holding out like holding on for dear life against a very strong Munster team, with, you know, the amazing Stephen Myler, who could get in the Animals team himself because he's the GOAT. You know, with him constantly just slotting penalties, and just the Ospreys were great and they defended brilliantly. And obviously, from the fact that I was watching two games in the second half, I was paying a lot more attention in the first half. But to hold that out and to defend in the way they did says a lot about how they've turned a corner under Toby Booth.
Yeah,
and it's the two big things that have changed, and it seems to have changed a complete mentality at the Ospreys. Toby Booth's come in, Myler's come in. Myler's steadied the ship on the pitch. And then, as a whole, the Ospreys look a different beast. They keep the animal puns coming. They look a different beast altogether from what they did before. Was it a heart and mouth moment when he put a picture up from Bath? Because he did seem to be trolling Ospreys fans by going, "I'm only visiting. I'm here for family."
He did also tweet today as well, didn't he? I think, or yesterday, about the whole of the squad and their families went out for a big Sunday lunch together as well. I noticed that.
Oh. That's so
apparently,
nice.
Apparently, that all of the squad were there. There was a few of the old family and friends. Like, each took a few people and stuff with them. I'm sure, is there something like 1147 Club or something it's called? Or something like that? Hotel?
Oh, the 147 Club?
1147, I think it's called.
Oh, Maximum. This is the 147. But like a super club.
Yes, yeah. Maximum Breaks. But no, the three things I took from the game on Saturday night was Eddie Butler. Shane Williams called Reese Webb, Reese Williams, and Reese Page within the space of about 30 seconds.
It's impressive.
Yeah. How wonderful, I think, and I said it in two games, I've did it today, in defence Alex Cuthbert's been in the two games he's played. Like, he hasn't really had a chance with ball in hand, but defensively, one-on-one tackling, he's been immense. I thought he was the same against Benetton. And I know there was lots of criticism, again, going back to idiots on Twitter, but I thought Holly Davison was fantastic. Like, the way she refereed
that
game
great.
Was amazing.
Yeah. She's one of the best refs in the whole league.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't want to sound condescending when I say this, but like, some people wouldn't expect the game to be as good as it was if there's a woman ref. But like, I actually watched that game thinking, like, she's not a female ref, like, she's a referee, and she's absolutely run that game to a T better than anyone else would have done. I don't think there was any decision that was incorrect. I think everything was spot on, the chat and everything that she was doing. I just think she's probably one.
I loved her put downs of Peter Romani as well. That was a spectacle.
But yeah,
anyone with put downs of Peter Romani is always superb in my book.
Yeah.
Am I right to say that's only her second league game as well?
I think she's got a couple more. I remember her first, and that was probably the start of this year, wasn't it? So
yeah, didn't she? She did a couple of Rainbow Cup games, I think.
Oh, that'll be it. Yeah. No, that would be it. Yeah,
a technicality, but yeah. I refuse to see that as a real competition. I mean, fucking sure. Benetton won, so yeah. I refuse to accept that.
Yeah,
and I think
no.
of the URC then and the Pro 14. I think this is only the second URC slash Pro 14 game she's done. And then a magical, mystical cup.
So I've kind of realised that all of the referees I tolerate in the USC are all Scottish now. That, like, Mike Adamson, I really like, and I think seems like a top bloke. Holly Davidson is brilliant and consistent and very clear in everything she does. And I know he's not the best referee in the world, but I have a real soft spot for Sam Grove White, because he's just kind of like he's like the 11-year-old kid who's decided he's going to have a go at reffing. And like, he very softly puts down players, but in a kind of a fun way. And, you know, he is consistent, in fairness, even though some of his calls aren't the best. But, like, you know, I really like Sam Grove White. So I've realised that all three referees who have ever been good in the history of the Pro 14 and the URC are all Scottish.
I'm going to throw in this, they're all Scottish, all women, because I'm also a big fan of Joy Neville. I think
she's great as well.
And I forget.
Why Ollie Davidson falls. She's the middle meeting point of the,
Venn
diagram. Yes.
Venn diagram, thank you very much.
But can we add another person to that Venn diagram then, which was the South African referee that the Ospreys had in Benetton?
Yes, Amy
Barker. Her times were fantastic.
Yes.
Like, I haven't travelled all this way to be your childminder is probably the best line I've ever heard on rugby field.
Yeah, Yeah, Amy Barrett-Theron, she's brilliant. And I'm looking forward to seeing more of her because she's obviously a very well-established world rugby referee. So to have somebody of her standard refereeing in the URC is so great, such a great opportunity for the league.
Mm-hmm. So what we're going to say is the only way to be a good referee in the URC now is to be born a woman or to be born in Scotland.
Yes,
I'm that's gonna put that to bed. That's the only.
Yeah. Thing.
And I will. I'm big enough to admit when I'm wrong, because I spent many a year slagging off a certain referee. I may have said he only got in because of family connections. Ben Whitehouse had a good game, didn't he?
Did he?
Yes. Did you not think?
No.
Okay, I'll take it back.
I thought there was two decisions he had to make, which he got correct, which is the red card and the contact in the air late on from Rio Dyer on Matthew Morgan. Apart from that, there's even times where, I don't know if you've noticed it, where he's actually called hands away, and he said, well done, and then is given a penalty for hands in the ruck from the same player that he's just said well done for. Like, on commentary, he's actually congratulating him for doing the right thing and then given a penalty.
I think congratulating players for not playing the ball on the floor is exceptional as well, to be fair. I'm coming for this patronising, or if it's the right for an elite level athlete.
Can I just shock you? I like Ben Whitehouse, despite what I said earlier.
Strong vibes, yeah. Strong vibes, though.
Yeah. No, I've always had a bit of like an affection towards Ben Whitehouse and thought he's quite a nice referee. And then I realised that everybody hates him. And like, I know he's not the best referee in the world, but you know, I think he's all right, and I think Craig Evans is all right. I'm realizing there's more referees I actually think are okay. But yeah, there's my 50 cents on Ben Whitehouse. Also, last thing on the Munster Ospreys game. Firstly, Reese Webb, what the hell has happened to you, man? Secondly, I love Ben Healy going for just constant mad shots from like 90 meters to try and win the game. I'm so here for that.
Referee Craig Evans, by the way, is a lovely bloke. I've met Craig Evans and he's superb and extremely knowledgeable about refereeing. As in, you pick an age grade and he will tell you how he would ref that game differently. More than laws.
Wow, that's genuinely very interesting.
I was on a refereeing course that he came down to give sort of a little bit of insight on.
Right,
and someone said, "Where would you stand at the line out?" And he went, "At what age?" And as well,
right.
And he told us from the 9s or the 10s at line outside, anyway, where he would stand depending on where he was, because, well, there's no offside line on this, or we're not really looking.
And he's refereed tier one internationals.
Yeah, unbelievable. And the knowledge of him to go, yeah, because this and this, or because of that, and because of the 15s level, we can have this, but we can't have lifting, we can't. Oh, I was blown away. And they're a genuinely nice guy as well. Sat around, lovely bloke.
Oh, that's great. But
yeah, I'm a big fan of Craig. Never met Ben Whitehouse, I'm going to say. So he looks like a lovely book. He reminds me of Tyrone from Coronation Street. So he's got to be a lovely guy. He's probably fizzy, he is.
Lost on me, I'm afraid, mate.
He's literally, I know him and Deidre Barlow, I think. But yeah, it's a fantastic result. I still think Munster are possibly like the team to watch. I still think Munster are probably gonna, and if anything, I think this is going to kick them on.
Yeah. And also, how completely above that standard Tyke Byrne was, who was just like completely dominating the entire game. And again, like these are the sort of things that in the league, it's fun to see just a world-class player coming in and completely tearing it up every now and then.
Yeah, I agree. Like Tyke Byrne on Saturday was just, like, it was funny to see like him back in league games, I suppose, like haven't seen him do so well like in the games he played, even though it was quite small game time, I suppose, for the Lions in the summer. Just seeing him back in like sort of against mere mortals, I suppose
he's
actually quite good in the sense of like he's still like a fantastic player. But yeah, I know obviously the other highlight that Steph would have had from the game on Saturday night was seeing DDA having his shorts pulled down, I suppose, Steph, was it?
Oh, absolutely superb. And I've it's like, you know, that the most rewound scene in the 90s was Basic Instinct.
Yeah.
I think that's now going to be replaced by
you rewinding it to see
me rewinding it. He's a, look, that's all I'm going to say. He's a very handsome, very sexy man. I don't think anyone can argue anything differently except Johnny McGinty, who argues on a regular that he isn't. But Johnny McGinty has no taste. So that's all we can say. The man, as I've said before, the man has sausage rolls for desserts. He's lucked out. He's got a lovely wife. It must be my mistake because Michelle is great. I don't know how it's happened. I really hope Johnny listens this week.
Yeah, I was going to say fast forward to our message on our group chat in a few days' time once it's posted out.
But I've got to lay the groundwork because, as you know, if something happens again and we end up on another Dodmaster, me and Johnny, it's no all's barred, right? It comes down to who can win, and it's no all's barred. And so I'm just going to lay the groundwork now. I'm just going to get it in, get it done.
Mind games.
I think both of us would have to have a mind first for that to work. So, a result for Cardiff, even if you don't think it's a particularly great one. In the end, really, a bit of a decent result for the Dragons because they got 2 points out of that game. So that's a good result for them. A good result for the Scarlets on Friday because we already know Benetton, Rainbow Cup champions, already beat some big teams. But fuck me, was that not the most frustrating game to watch? Purely because of fucking refereeing decisions. Now, I don't want to come across as the old one-eyed turkey, right? Because after the Edinburgh game, when the most dubious try I've ever seen given was given against us, I thought, well, that's the shit refereeing decision that everyone can clearly see is wrong, has gone against us this year, and now we'll get one back in our favour and all will be well. And then I sat on the watch Collins and Benetton on Friday and we went, that's another fucking eight. Just keep throwing these shit decisions in. Did we see?
Yeah. So I think the one thing that was quite infuriating for the Scarlets was Scott Williams being like a complete, at times a one-man team and just completely ripping through, you know, proper knife through butter stuff through the Benetton defence and just thinking, oh God, he's going to get injured at some point, isn't he? And he made it through, you know, he seemed to get through relatively unscathed, but there was a horrifying sense of inevitability about that game.
Well, there was, as the full-time whistle went and he sort of drops onto his own chis and just sort of like looks around. I think when the cameras cut at the end of the show, he was still there. I don't think he got back. He was still, I don't know whether it was just a relief of finishing that game, where sure, it was a sheer exhaustion because he must have covered every blade of grass on that pitch. He was unbelievable. I said when we talked about the Wales squad, I thought he should have been in there. Now, whether it's because obviously he's had a long layoff, then he had his injury. Obviously, we didn't know that it was an eye injury and that he's bounced back from that, fine. But he should be in that squad. We'll come to a bit more discussion on the squads in a bit before we end it all off. But he was absolutely incredible. It was the Scott Williams. I mean, the turn of pace. I mean, he's still only 30. Like, in my head,
he's got a couple more years left. Yeah. I think it's because he's had so long with injuries and, like, I'm convinced the Ospreys were just a complete curse for him, you know? And now that he's actually going to find a bit of form now, he's back at the Scarlets, which must be infuriating for Ospreys fans. But, yeah, it's just, I'm just glad to see him playing again because there was a point where I thought, you know, I feared the worst for him. And, you know, setting up those two tries for Dane Blacker was just, it was like seeing Scott Williams at his best, you know?
Yeah. He absolutely looked a world beat. And if you told me he was getting called up today, I'd be delighted. I mean, as a Scarlets fan, I'm more than happy to keep him at the minute. We've got enough players playing for Wales, so I'm more than happy to keep him where he is and watch him do this week in, week out.
Yeah. Quick word for Thomas Gallo as well, who I'd not heard of, but for Benetton, scoring two tries, including one from at least 906 metres, including a step on the fullback and like a kind of out to win. It was amazing. I mean, it was less amazing the fact that the referee tried to disallow it for about 6 minutes when it was very clearly a try. And even if it wasn't, just like, don't disallow it, you grass. It's like, it's a prop going 70 meters. It was more like 40, but still, like, it's incredible. It's what we love to see.
I think it would have got longer as the night went on. I'm sure the rules of rugby in Italy are the same as over here. By the time he finished, he caught the ball into Lance Hamlet.
Yeah.
Beat all 15 men. The sidestep was outrageous.
Glorious. Like, absolutely genuinely brilliant. Like, if that was a centre, and the way he finished that would still be brilliant.
And to add to the mystique and stuff over it as well, like, genuine, like, wonderfulness, is, have you seen his try scoring gif that Benetton then tweeted? Because he's got a try. It adds to the try. It's incredible.
Okay, noted.
They've obviously got gifts for everybody, but yeah, it's wonderful, wonderful stuff.
When he inevitably scores 4 tries this weekend, I'll keep an eye out for that.
Yeah,
well, we'll put it on the I'll tweet it onto our timeline later. I'll go looking for it and tweet it on, because I haven't seen that yet either. So that's quite interesting.
It's exciting.
What pissed me off was how long they looked at that try.
Yeah.
When it was fine, if there was anything, it was marginal and not worth quibbling over.
When you have to watch 7 or 8 replays of something, you probably should just stick with your on-field decision, you know?
Yeah.
And there was another one with the Scarlets down the other end where it was the same thing. I think it was a disallowed try, and it's just that they're like, you know, you've got an on-field decision for this reason, that if you can't figure something out, you eventually just go, look, we don't have any compelling evidence. Let's just say this is a try, for example, with the Gallo one, where he'd sprinted, you know, so far and provided such entertainment. Like, you're the fun police if you're looking to disallow that try.
Well, we went to a phase where it kind of felt like the ref didn't want us to win. Like, you felt like Benetton deserved more, which they had a lot of territory and they had a lot of possession. But we got to the point where I thought the Benetton first try wasn't a try. I want to say I thought it wasn't a try. It was the most forward pass I've ever seen in my life.
And then it was dubious.
The first angle they showed, Ioane passes the ball cleanly forward.
Over the 22-metre line, isn't it?
Yeah, with the line there to show that they went forward.
Yeah.
But crucially, with the angle zoomed in on his hands. To show that they came forward out of his hands, right?
He was really trying to compensate by going to the TMO for everything else for the rest of the game.
Yeah. And it was the first angle goes, well, that's clearly forward, that's fine. We'll come back, we'll have a scrum, we'll carry on from there. And then the longer it went on, and I'm going, well, we can see from, and it just clicks to go, he's going to give this try. And then he said, there's no clear and obvious evidence. And I was going, apart from all those videos you just watched of a fucking forward pass.
It reminded me of the try that Wales scored in the Six Nations against England, where it was a case of, like, they keep looking and looking and looking and looking. And you go, well, he's got to give it now, then, isn't he? Because if he's looking for evidence to show that it's not a try, then he's going to be given a try. Like, it just went on and on and on for ages. But I suppose the best try was the Dane Blacker one, wasn't it, for the Scarlets? That sort of Harlem Globetrotters-esque sort of reminded me.
Yeah, the second one.
Reminded me of playing for Rumney Youth when I was about 16, that did.
It's funny how people's memories get affected as they get older, isn't it? but no, that was an amazing try to end. And then that was the glimpse of Scott Williams, where he steps and the pace, the turn of pace is brilliant before he gives the Dane Blacker. And fair play to Blacker, because I'll be honest, when we signed him, I thought, oh, he's a decent 9 and maybe to cover. He's really stepped up and he's looking a good player for us. And the support lines he runs.
He was top try scorer last season for the Scarlets, wasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't hard to be top try scorer for us last season.
No, sure.
Last. But
obviously followed by Javon Sebastian.
Scottish international, obviously. So, or future Scottish international.
Yeah,
didn't get his cap. But he's in he's been in squads.
Yeah, well, I was going to say Scottish person, Javon Sebastian, but would you say person, Javon Sebastian?
Yeah. Look, he's got one step further than Stephen Shingler did. He got a call up and actually managed to turn up the training.
True, he maintained it.
He's already one step along. Then, well, I'm going to go to town on the official, because the TM will really piss me off on Friday night. There's the Steph Evans not try, which the first Steph Evans not try, which was the random one. which was sort of knocked back by the Benetton fullback as he came to cover. Then Steph Evans fell on it and seemingly grounds it with his elbow. Now, I've got no problem with if they either decide the Benetton player gets it down because his fingers touch it as it touches the grass, and despite all the talk of control and downward pressure, this whole nonsense, it doesn't count. It looks like he kind of shovels it up into the air, which I have no idea what he's doing and what he's thinking. But if they say he's got there first, I'm fine with that decision, right? If they say Steph Evans, it hits his arm, but he doesn't ground it, so it's a knock-on, I'm fine with that decision. And if they say it was shoveled backwards and then Steph Evans falls on it, but he falls on it with an upper part of his body and his arm hits it, so it's a try, I've got no problem with that decision. The decision he came up with was neither of those three, where he just went, ah, yeah, he just sort of knocks it back and then it runs. No, because he definitely gets a touch on it.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's absolutely no way the decision you've given can be right. Like, you had three options and you've chosen secret option four, which is clearly fucking wrong.
It wasn't TMO Brian McNeese by any chance, was it?
See, this is the problem I've got, because there was another one then as well where it seemed like Benetton knocked it back. And they said the Scarlets knocked it forward and Steph Evans caught it into as a penalty. And I, for the life of me, I can't see where it touches a Scarlets player at all. It's a Benetton player's hands in between Steph Hughes's hands and falls to the, which again, okay, it's marginal. But we've got so many fucking angles on these things now. I wasted so much fucking time. But the thing that pisses me off more than anything is that it makes it more and more difficult to have a go at these pricks on Twitter who think it's some sort of Irish fucking conspiracy that Welsh teams keep losing, when Irish referees give fucking five important decisions against a Welsh team. And then I've got to go on Twitter and explain to certain people, mostly around a certain region in the south, in the Glamorgan area, why there is no conspiracy. There is no Illuminati around the fucking Pro 14 and the URC and the Rainbow Cup, because they make it fucking difficult to fight.
Are we talking about like normal sort of people that support a team in the Morgan that might potentially stand like on the south stand potentially? Or
I'll be honest, I can't remember which is a north stand and which is a south stand, and I know they fucking hate each other like those two tribes in Gulliver's Travels, but I can't remember which one's which. It's like those, I can't remember which tribe opens their egg at the top in Gulliver's Travels and which tribe opens their egg at the bottom, but I know they're both pedantic pricks. It's very similar things happening at Cardiff Arms Park. Anyway.
I've had my run-ins with people from that stand before, so I better stay quiet.
Which stand, the north stand or the south stand?
I think south, but I'm not too sure.
There's a couple, I don't want to tarry them the same brush, because there's a few people in the south stand who are absolutely great and I like talking to them, they're great people. Although I will say, I once saw Rob Owley sat in there, so you make it that way, you will. But yeah, all in all, I'm delighted to have got a result against Benetton and come away with 5 points, because the further into that game it went, the more I thought, like, we're going to lose this. This is another loss. And yeah, then it's a difficult start to be. That try is a sign as well of the Dwayne Peel thing starting to work. We're starting to look like Scarlets looked before.
Yeah.
When we were playing good rugby, and when we were playing good rugby under Pivac, because I'm going to get into that in. Like, we were very good under Wayne Pivac. He's clearly a very good coach with a good system. And I'm going to get that in now, because I think I'm probably going to have a go at him later on. So I just want to get that in now. I was a Scarlets fan. I really like Pivac. Stephen Jones is one of my favourite players, and I love him as a coach.
Yeah.
And so I do like this Welsh regime. But let's move on to the Autumn Internationals. Shall we start with the Autumn International that's already happened?
The one on Saturday.
Shall we start with the America game against the All Blacks? I did point out to you, it took longer for the All Blacks to do the ACA than it did to score a try. That's pretty impressive.
That is good.
That is good.
A statistic for you that I kind of thought of is that in the time it took between the kickoff and the first All Blacks try, you could have watched nearly 5 vines.
What that tells us is that Will is a bit younger than us.
The big thing I took from the game at that on the weekend was the fact that like New Zealand, I think, scored 17 tries, and yet none of their tries was actually the best try of the game, because that was Nate Augsburger's try
That
for
was
America.
great. Also, San Diego Legion legend, who are the best team in all of MLR, obviously. It was a great day for San Diego Legion because, right, Nate Augsburger scored the USA's first ever try against the All Blacks. And then another San Diego Legion player, Ryan Matthias, scored the second USA try against the All Blacks. And on the same day, they only went and bloody signed Mar Nonu, didn't they?
Yep. Great day. Great day.
That's what I was most excited for, another sign of Mar Nonu. But because I've been trying to keep an eye on MLR, and I love it, and it's got all the potential to be something fantastic. Like, it's got the potential to be something you really want to watch. And they're signing some genuinely good players. Like, it's still got a little bit of vibes of when they first set up that American League in football in the 70s. And they went, let's sign Pele. And like, Pele turned up being fucking 87 years old or whatever he was at the time, and just like... half-assed.
Yeah.
But now they bring it, and they're bringing through some genuine talent themselves.
I mean, what says it all about MLR is that you look at, so the LA Giltinis, who of course won MLR, their two fly halves are Matt Gitto and Jack Carty's slightly less good brother.
Odd. but it's a bonkers league at the minute.
I love it.
Like, and it could go one or two ways. Either it could become this like freak show mad league where you go, oh yeah, remember him that played three games for the Wallabies in like the early 2000s?
Like,
or
Chris Pennell's over there now. Remember him?
Or it could just
Dudley Fife is tearing it up over there for the New England Free Jacks. And Ben Foden looks completely anonymous playing for New York. I love it.
Well, this is the thing, because they bring it, and I'm open, like, Mar Nonu, you would thought, would create a bit of a buzz, right?
Yeah.
Mar Nonu is going to create something that, like, people want to turn up, and anyone knows a little bit about rugby, be like, oh yeah, Mar Nonu, we can go there and watch Mar. Who the fuck would like rugby in America? It's going, oh, Ben Foden! Like,
yeah, sure. Well, have you seen the clips of... So, this is Mar Nonu's second stint at the Legion. Have you seen the clips of when he first played there? Because he was absolutely unplayable, and he played that game at, like, such a like kind of a slow pace, like he's playing in slow motion type thing. He would spot space that the other players, including his teammates, physically didn't know existed, which was just incredible to see. And I've been accused before of that being the sole reason why I've chosen to support the amazing San Diego Legion, whom I love dearly, regardless of whether or not Mar Nonu plays for them. But you know, just further proof that the Legion are indeed the best team in MLR.
Well, I've committed my allegiance to New York, United Empire.
Okay, so you do love Ben Foden after all.
Well, this was the thing, and then they went out and saying Ben Foden and fucking Bastero. Oh, I'm not. Yeah, you know.
You've got
talk about players with troubled past.
Sure. Yeah. You've got is it New York who have Cleveland Lopes are playing for them? The Namibia fly half. I think you've got them. So you know, there's some royalty in MLR.
All about guillotines for me. All about guillotines.
Oh, glory supporter, mate.
No,
and anyone with a stupid name like that, I want nothing to do with.
Yeah, screw the guillotines, mate. Oh, Owen Farrell. Oh, Adam Ashley Cooper. Yeah, who cares? Suck it, you know.
Andy Ellis, I think, is with us now as well.
Oh, of course. Yeah, got a lot of time for him.
Andy Ellis is 37. Marnano's 39. I'm only 35. I've got 2 years, I reckon. I can get 2 good years of myself in America. Once I kick this long COVID, I'm back in training.
I've checked. So you don't have Cleveland Loeb, sir. I've made that up clearly. But you do have Juan Manuel Leguizamon, who is 38.
Well, he's a pup compared to Marnano.
Zach Taulafo's still playing, also age 38, at New York.
Well, I like it. We're just gonna. So yeah, MLR is my thing. The Japanese league, which is completely gonna blow my mind this year because there's three divisions going on, which are all called Division One, I think, or League One, or whatever they're called, which is gonna completely fry my brain at the moment. I've picked my team as well, based purely on I love a shirt.
Okay.
The Rico Black Ram shirt is the nicest shirt I've ever seen. And I bought it at 1 o'clock in the morning when I stumbled across it. I'm there. So, well, you haven't got a Japanese team yet, have you?
No.
I'm a fan of the Wild Knights, the Panasonic Wild Knights, for two main reasons. One of them being that they currently are the home of the amazing, lovely, wonderful Hadley Parks.
Yep.
And the second one being that after his incredible stint at the Blues, that's who Sam Norton Knight signed for.
I think so it's the second one. It sounds like a kiss.
Any team that isn't that team, then that'd be great.
Well, we'll get you a team picked. Well, I'll commit a full episode to us choosing you a Japanese team.
I'm sure I chose one ages ago, and I've completely forgot when it first started. Like a couple of
forget
years
them
ago.
Then. Don't worry about them. You're having a new one.
Wild Knights also have like Sakata and Matsudo and like a few really good members of like of the core Japanese team. I will also throw out, but yeah.
Well, so my if I picked a team called the Wild Knights, it would have been because it sounds like the B side of a Kiss song. That would be my only reason for picking the Wild Knight.
Yeah, they're currently in a lawsuit with Muse.
I forgot what we started talking about. Yeah, we were moving on to Autumn Internationals and we've ended up
Japanese
rugby. Which, if we're going to talk, let's you know, cross the streams. If we're going to talk Japanese rugby and the Welsh team, fucking let's call Hadley Parks back up. I haven't started my campaign for Hadley Park for Wales yet. I tried it with the Lions. No, Warren didn't bite. I think Pivak's more easily swayable. He seems like a man who could be swayed more easily. So we'll start Hadley Parks for Wales campaign tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, Japan did also push the Wallabies close at the weekend, and that was also a fantastic game. And they were actually kind of unlucky not to win it, you know? It was just kind of like a 14-point turnaround in the last sort of 5 minutes kind of stopped them from beating the Wallabies. And that win against, you know, both the Wallabies and the All Blacks will eventually come for them. And they're always a joy to watch. And I kind of had a moment that afternoon of going, why am I watching other rugby teams? Can't all games just involve Japan somewhere?
I'm up for that. I'm up for that. I mean, the away games are going to be a nightmare. Isn't it?
Yeah,
we
don't make my
Six Nations where you're playing Tokyo.
my league of playing for Long Eaton second team this season is going to go horribly wrong when all of our fixtures are away against Japan.
Wait until you think that's bad. I've got mini rugbys on a Sunday morning.
Oh,
it's bad enough when we got to travel to Newport for a game.
Playing against the senior Japan team as well. Jamie Joseph doesn't know what's cooking.
Did they have a south stand in Japan by any chance?
Anyway, shall we get this back on track?
Sure.
Obviously, the first Wales game on Saturday, All Blacks. It would be a difficult game at the best of times, it's fair to say. We're without a couple of people. There's a few names missing. First of all, are we confident going into this game? Anyone?
Confident of the game taking place.
Yes.
Confident of potentially both teams scoring points.
I'll take that you're confident of the game taking place. We lived through 2020. That confidence wasn't there.
That's true.
We've already made massive steps forward in a year.
I'm confident halftime's not going to be 59-7. But apart from that, I can't really add any more comment. However, I will say, and I'll say this now, we are recording on Monday. I have been quite vocal about this today since the announcement. I think Alex Cuthbert will start on Saturday, because I don't think if you're going to call him in, you're not going to start him. I have a feeling that there'll be something that will come out later in the week that potentially is an issue to one of the other wingers. And I think he'll start maybe Owen Lane. So I think maybe he'll start with Josh Adams. Because I don't think there's any point in calling somebody up with his experience now in test week if he's not going to start. So I think when the team comes out on probably Thursday, wouldn't surprise me if he's named number 14.
Well, obviously, Liam Williams is looking doubtful now for that game. It looks like he'll be fit maybe a week after, maybe 2 weeks later, but the All Blacks game has looked like it's come too soon for him.
Mm-hmm.
So that's obviously the cover that's come in. I'm happy to see Alex Cuthbert back because he took needless shit.
Yeah.
Because he is a quality player.
Yeah.
He's a fantastic finisher. balling out, he's superb. I still, I'm not going to paper over cracks that defensively he isn't the best defender in the world, but then that's not always the case with some fantastic players anyway. There's plenty of players that are the best players we like to watch, and I would pick in my team every week that can't fucking tackle at all.
But I would
So.
add to that that I think that opinion of Alex Cuthbert on it is potentially of how he was in the past, because I think the two games with Osprey so far he's been defensively sound,
Yeah.
one of which he mainly like the tackle in the corner against Ioane, which was basically won the match for the Ospreys in the end, because obviously if they score there, points make a difference. So I think, like I might make a point earlier on, I don't think he's had chance with ball in hand so far in the two games he's played for the Ospreys, but defensively I think he's been superb.
He did absolutely flatten somebody on Saturday. I can't remember who it was, but it was on the Ospreys' own line. They kind of put him on a crash ball. And he absolutely mullered someone, like proper slammed him backwards and stepped over him and stuff. And that's what I want to see. I want to see him ball land. I want to see him in open spaces. I don't think he's ever been as bad defensively as people ever made out.
No,
No.
there's a couple of very high profile cases of him. Like there's the Elliot Daly one always comes up. There's the Fory Dupré one in the World Cup that always comes up. There's a couple of really high profile misses that he's had that always come up when, frankly, there's a lot of times where you get through a game, and obviously defending on the wing in international rugby is one of the hardest things to do in the sport,
Yeah.
But a lot of times, he will make it through a game without making any errors, sometimes it's just the way it goes.
And listen, there's been some high profile players, some high profile players within Wales who are like some of the bigger names in the sport. I don't want to throw anyone else under the bus, so I'm trying to deliberately not mention names, but who have been defensively weak on the outside and players who you'd expect to be good, players who are strong, players who are quick, who are defensively weak, and that's just the way it is. And I took shit of when Owen Lane made it as well as David for saying he's Alex Cuthbert 2.0, and everyone went, like, no, that's not an insult. Like, Cuthbert's a great player, like,
It's a
he's a
good one.
lion. He scored bags of tries for us, he won us Grand Slams, he was the biggest player in that, in perhaps like our most famous game in recent times. That's 33. Him and Kiprek were the standout players.
I have a poster of Alex Cuthbert scoring a try on my wall, from the
Yeah,
33 game.
so like it wasn't meant to be an insult. What I mean, he's brilliant with ball in hand. He's a fantastic carrier. He's strong. He's perhaps defensively weaker than some players who are available in that position. But that's like when you can pick a player who's defensively sound and perhaps doesn't have that X factor going forward. So then it's weighing that option up. Okay, he's stable. He's good. But then if you've got a player who can score you two tries and cost you one, I want him in my team as opposed to a player who doesn't concede any tries, but doesn't score any either, doesn't create any either. So it makes very little difference. So I'm delighted to see him in. I will say though, just to flip that slightly, if I was Jonah Holmes, I'd be fucking livid, man. Because I've been fighting Jonah's corner for weeks and months, Sonia. And if you'd look at in-form wingers, Jonah Holmes, I think he's suffered the cost of being picked at fullback for a while when that's clearly not his position. He's clearly better on the right wing because every time he's played on the right wing, he's looked good and he's looked dangerous and he's scored tries and he's been superb. And so if I was Jonah Holmes, I'd be like, well, fucking what about me? Like, if you're picking on form, like, I'm right here doing it fucking week in, week out.
I think I've done the opposite. I've talked down Jonah Holmes quite a lot, especially at the start of his international career. But he is undoubtedly on really, really good form. Was brilliant in the Rainbow Cup for the Dragons when that was a thing, because of that council loads, obviously. But he has carried that on, with the ORC's return, and obviously the Dragons pushing Leinster close. He was a big part in that game. He scored that try in what game was it? It was the Connacht game,
Oh, okay.
where he scored that try and he played really well. He is undoubtedly on very good form and covers two positions. And Wales are hardly swimming in fullbacks this weekend, are they?
That's what's a bit random for me. Knowing full well, Liam Williams isn't going to be fit. Ooh,
They're kind of stuck with
is
either
Josh
Johnny McNichol
Adams?
or a 10, haven't they? Or Josh Adams.
Yeah.
I would love it if it was Josh Adams. That'd be so much fun. Remember how fun it was when you played there midweek for the Lions? Maybe not the best option, but fun.
Well, perhaps we'll put seven forwards on the bench as well, and go for
Hey, why
Lions
not?
tactics.
From the conversation we had earlier on, I don't think we're going to be able to put seven forwards on the bench, because if we do that, one of them is going to be Seb Davis, and no one ever wants that, do they?
Seb Davis at centre, it's happening.
Well, this is the other issue I've got, and I said when the team got announced, the question was asked, well, why is Seb Davis there? And I said, well, I think it's because they can utilise him in the back row as well.
Yeah, he's sort of
didn't expect that in the first game.
Pivac likes a player like him, I think, because, you know, for all of his faults in the set piece, like, he's athletic, he's quick, he's got a good pass and a good kick on him. Like, you know, he's definitely the sort of player that Pivac can mould into his system.
He wants him as his Tadhg Burn.
Yeah, yeah.
The problem is he's not Tadhg Burn.
Sure, yeah.
Because there's only one Tadhg Burn, and it's Tadhg Burn. Like, he's exceptional talent. And yeah, Pivac. Yeah. Plucked him from obscurity virtually, like he'd been dropped. Yeah. No one in Ireland wants
Seb Davis needs to do his time and start delivering pizzas in Cork.
Start doing his pizza. Look, we've called one before now, Tadhg Burn's 9-inch, so let's not get on pizzas again. But yeah, I think Pivac's got that in his head. It's Gatland's fault. Like, let's get this straight. It was Gatland who fannied on with this sort of process of trying to pick Seb Davis and turn him into a blind side, or turn him into an eight.
Yeah.
And you can't even play four or five, let alone six.
It's something that winds me up, because if you've got an athletic second row, just let them be a good second row rather than trying to go like, oh yeah, they could play eight.
It happens so much. Well, was Alan Wynne's first cap at six? He played a game at six.
Yeah, yeah, he's played a couple games at six. Yeah.
And like, I told you they've put there, Courtney Laws they've put there. Like, you can't just be a, if you're a good second row, like, oh well, let's try him in the back row. And if he's good, a good second row is really fucking important.
Like, he's obviously not a great person to talk about at the minute, but Corey Hill, when they were like, yeah, let's try and put him at six, it's like, no, just let him be a second row who can handle a ball.
Talking of Venn diagrams, Corey Hill falls into our plane in Japan and dubious past now.
Yes.
Corey Hill's right smack in the middle of that one.
Yeah.
I'm angry not only for Jonah Holmes as well. We're struggling in our back row.
Are we? I mean, we've had a few injuries, but we've still got a good back row.
I think they've said today, because of players who, obviously, Thomas Young can't play on Saturday. Yeah. Faletau can't play on Saturday. Ellis Jenkins is a maybe.
We're crossing our fingers, yeah.
So we're down to three Dragons players and Seb Davis on the bench, which begs the question, why have we chosen now to call Thomas Young back in and not just called up Jack Morgan?
Jack Morgan, yeah, he should be miffed, man. Like, he's on seriously good form, and it feels like such an inevitability that he's going to not only get a cap, but surely a starting jersey one day.
Well, I was angry that he wasn't in the last squad, because that was my tip for the last squad, was that Jack Morgan would be in there.
Yeah.
We called that early, I think. Didn't we?
He's said young.
Like, Jack Morgan's going to be in that squad. And then he wasn't, and so I was like, fuck's sake. I'm even more pissed off now, because he's putting good performances.
Is there anybody who has like less one cap wonder energy than Ollie Griffiths? Matthew Screech makes sense, should be a one cap wonder. Like, remember Gavin Evans? Makes sense that he was a one cap wonder in his day, you know? Like, Ollie Griffiths, like, he should have at least five or six caps, you know? I'm not saying that he should be starting for us or whatever, because we've got a lot of good back rows in Wales. But all I'm saying is, if he was playing in the era when Robin Sowden Taylor was second choice for Wales, he would probably be knocking on the doors of 50.
Well, this is, we've got this abundance of back row players now, but it seems like we've kind of lost trouble, because we've lost a few. We've kind of lost track of which ones are exceptionally good.
Sure.
And which ones are just good regional players. Yeah. But for me, Jack Morgan looks every bit the kind of player who we could build our future on.
Put him and Basham together. Tipperick,
yeah, exactly. And when we haven't got Tipperick and Ellis Jenkins is dubious, and then we know the first game is outside the test window.
Yeah.
This idea of, we look for special dispensation for a star. Well, you didn't need that. He didn't need special dispensation, because you've got a fantastic young fucking open side.
Yeah.
Who's doing it week in, week out, right here. As well as the other players that he didn't call up that were good enough to come
in. Maybe they've called in Alex Cuthbert as a number eight.
Well, imagine him picking up the bass.
Yeah. Into my veins, please.
I'm all for it now. I take it all back. Alex Cuthbert can go with Johnny May and Jack Noel has failed.
Yes.
And start in the back row of an international. And against the talking. All Blacks, they just really make it.
Do the opposite of Radiki Samo, you know?
And end up scoring like four tries being man of the match as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look,
if it's good enough for first.
And then the week after being dropped because Toby's back.
If it's good enough for Bot, yeah, it's good enough for anyone. Let's go for it. I'm all for. I mean, Scarlett's played Blake Thompson at outside centre, didn't he, the other week?
Yeah.
So we need to see more of this man shittery. Yeah. We need to see more people just
stop picking forwards in the forwards, man. It.
And then if we lose, I will support that view that came up on you a few weeks ago that test matches are just overblown friendlies.
Yeah.
Well, we've got nothing to lose. It's just an overblown friendly. Don't worry about it. We're worried about Six Nations and World Cup. Don't worry about it. It's fine. Which isn't at that fucking League of Nations thing or whatever it's called, rearing its ugly head again, innit? When they failed the first time, they went, just give some Pacific Island teams a place and try again. Hate that shit. So none of us are confident then.
Not of a win. You know, with players missing for us. I don't think it'll be a decimation. I think that we've got a decent team still that we could field. And I think it'll be a good experience. And I think that genuinely looking forward to a World Cup, we will benefit from this game, you know? So I am actually looking forward to watching it.
For me, it's going to go one of two ways. And either we'll be knocking on the door those last few minutes where we go, this could be the most unlikely win. Or we're in for a tune-in. But I feel like that into every game we've gone into.
It'll be one of those where it feels like the All Blacks haven't dominated you, but they are actually 30 points up on the scoreboard.
And it does feel like the way that you beat the All Blacks is to kind of play the kind of rugby that Pivak's trying to play. Like, I argued this when he first came in, that the teams now in a rugby championship are playing this offloading game, they're playing the open game, they're trying to keep a ball alive, they're looking to stay out the rucks as much as possible, and so that's how you beat them. And I got, you know, slammed for a year, it's fair to say, that we were just shit. So I'm going to try and keep that same level, but I the selections are just a bit off for me.
Mm.
They just, even, I know we're missing some big name players because they're injured or because they're playing in England, but it's the other selection things that are my issue. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. Do you want to throw a prediction? Do we want a prediction?
I'll happily predict the autumn as a whole, not necessarily that one game.
Well, can before we do this then, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say what they are. And I think you might know where I kind of say, but I've done it before. We've got a tarot reading for Wales's Autumn Internationals. Now, it's from the same person we got a tarot reading for the Six Nations, and they fucking nailed it.
They did,
The feedback was there'll be a few contentious moments. Wales will have a much better tournament than they were expecting. And they said that the person, because they don't want to say who they were, said, I'm getting this weird thing, like they're going to win it, but I'm also getting something that it's going to go wrong. And I can't get my head around how there's going to be this. But essentially that we were going to win it and there would be this inciting moment at the end that would spoil it. And obviously, we lost the fucking Grand
Slam. Did you get that reading from Priest Doolan?
I got it from Liam Williams. No. so it was spot on. It was perfect. And so I've gone back to them and said, can you do another one for the autumn? And they've done one. I've got a year. So I'll be 100%. I'm not going to read it out because, like, the weird person in me feels like that's going to fuck it up if I see what it is.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I've got them there and I've got it time stamped and everything so I can prove that it was done before and if it's okay. Right.
Yeah.
So I would say 2 from 4.
2 from 4?
Yeah. So I think we'll beat Fiji and we'll beat Australia.
Okay. Weirdly, I think we're more likely at this point to beat South Africa than we are Australia. I think South Africa have hit a bit of a decline and Australia look sky high at the minute. Like they were fantastic against Japan, and the way that they closed that game out, some of the tries they scored, they looked superb. So I don't disagree with 2 from 4. I'm probably going to enrage a load of South African fans on Twitter by saying this, but I think we are more likely to beat South Africa than we are Australia.
I'm going for exactly the same thing. I'm going 2 from 4, and I'm going that we'll beat South Africa and we'll beat Fiji. And the question is, if we win 2 from 4, is that a good order?
I think so. I think when you consider the fact that one of the games is going to be with a decimated squad, and then you're going to go into South Africa with a lot of the players not necessarily being match hard and match ready, I would say, as a group together, I think 2 from 4 is very acceptable.
I think it's an okay autumn. To be honest, it depends how the All Blacks game actually goes. If we lose that, it depends what Wales actually get out of it, you know. So obviously you'd want 3 from 4 to call it a good autumn, you know, with the standards of wanting to win a World Cup. But yeah, I wouldn't hate 2 from 4, but I wouldn't love it either.
Yeah, I'm tall. I don't know whether it is or not. I just wanted to
throw an impression out there. Yeah, it is.
I just wanted to watch you agonize over it. Because of the opponent, and I said that we're playing, obviously, the All Blacks, the world champions, and then a team who are very much on a comeback. So there's 3 very difficult games, not to mention that Fiji game.
Banana skin, man.
Potential to be a banana skin.
Oh, I hate playing Fiji.
Yeah. And Fiji, and you know that they have the day where they look fantastic and they could run in tries from anywhere. Like, we all remember 2007. Yeah. So, yeah, we'll see.
They're in our group again. 2007. Bastards. Yeah.
Some of us are masochists and have gone back and watched it all again.
So I pointed this out on you may be familiar with the Squidge Rugby World Cup retrospective podcast, which I host, and made with season 2 on the 1987 World Cup started airing this week. But anyway, I recently pointed out on that podcast that last time Wales didn't draw Fiji in a Rugby World Cup, I think I was 6 years old, and the next possible time that they could not draw Fiji, I will be in my 30s.
That's a quarter of a century of agony of building up to a game.
Yeah, it's agonizing.
Yeah, and that's pretty. That's a good stat. I like that.
Yeah.
Stat. Right. So we'll move on to something completely different. We haven't done this is kind of a as yet untitled quiz of the week. It's kind of not. I'm not going to take it as seriously as thing, because I've used this week to give Rugby Pass a bit of a kick in at times. So I did say on Twitter, I didn't think Rugby Pass could sing lower than fucking up Rugby 20 for people. And here we are now with Paddy Jackson. So what I thought I'd do was, in the spirit of that, and I went back and played Rugby 20 recently. It's such a fucking great game. If they got if the ratings had been right, it would be a fucking fantastic game.
I mean, I genuinely, last night, me and my brother played 6 games of Rugby World Cup 2011.
So nice. You could say Rugby 20 then?
No, 2011. We deem that the best one.
So, well, I know you've got to make a move soon as well. So we're going to quickly run through a few questions, and then I'll just run through some of the ratings. You can see how fucking batshit they are. So we're going to start. I'm not going to give you the rating for the player. And Will, I'm sure you'll know a lot of these already.
Some of them. I've played Rugby 20 a couple of times, one of which is actually on YouTube, funnily enough. Some people listening to this may know. I'm just going to quickly ask you, is one of the players you're about to name drop Matteo Minozzi?
He will be there later on.
Right, okay.
Giving no clues away, he will be there.
Okay.
So we'll start off the first one. Well, obviously rugby is a bit of a mishmash, loads of different positions. So it's quite hard to get, I think, how would you compare like a fullback to a prop, that kind of thing.
Sure.
So we'll start with 2 centers. So Jonathan Davis, as in Foxy, and Corey Allen. So which one's got the highest rating here, Will?
Well, it should be Foxy, surely. But then the way you've asked the question sounds like Corey Allen.
It's Corey Allen. It's Allen. Yeah. So we'll carry on and we'll just, like we usually do, a nice higher or lower. Yeah. It's Corey Allen with Owen. And then higher or lower than Corey Allen, Scott Williams?
Higher.
Which one?
Scott Williams is higher.
Scott Williams is 100% lower. He is lower. I was going to say, if you can do a big run on this, then I'll buy you food in the Wales-Australia game. So I forgot to say that, but that's fucked up anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So Scott Williams is lower than Corey Allen. Matteo Menotti? Than Scott Williams?
He's higher than Scott Williams.
He's absolutely not higher than. So what I'm going to start doing now, now that we realise how fucking mental this is, right? Jonathan Davis was a rating of... Now, bear in mind, this is 2020 we're looking at. So I know he was injured.
Yeah.
But it's fair to say he was quite well known in 2020, sure. Jonathan Davis.
Yeah.
And he's still playing at the international level now. So
yeah.
Jonathan Davis' rating was 58 out of 100.
Yeah, that's hard.
Corey Allen was 71.
Right.
Scott Williams was 52.
Wow.
Now, if you remember, Menotti's lower than Scott Williams is 50. He's 48.
I can remember from my couple of times of playing Rugby 20, my one thing that I took away from it was that Matteo Menotti was rated in the 40s, and it lives in my head rent-free.
What I will say is not all of these are like going to catch you out. I've generally... So, Eben Estevez. Compared to Menotti's 48.
He's going to be higher than...
He is higher. Rory Thornton.
He's got to be lower, because if he's higher than Estevez, then that's shocking.
He is higher than Estevez.
No!
Eben is 71. Rory Thornton is 75.
That's another one-cat wonder I will throw out.
They have actually watched Thornton play rugby.
So, do you want to carry on with the quiz, or do you want me to just go through some scores?
Yeah, fly for it. Fly for it.
I know you've got to go. So, we'll start in the 40s. Right? Yeah. I've just picked out a handful of players. So, one that's come up today, if you want to piss on his chances of getting an island cap, Rugby Plus rated Paddy Jackson 47. So they're very much backtracking you to say that he should be a starting island 10 because they rated him 47 out of 100 when they did on the ratings for this game. Ashton Ewitt had the exact same score, 47. Menotti, 48. Tyler Morgan, 49. he's come up as well today. Ollie Griffiths, 51. The at the time, I think, they wouldn't have been, but over the past few years, an Ospreys trio of Lydiate, Scott Williams and Stephen Myler, 52. So Stephen Myler with a nice eye, like the man who's changed the Ospreys.
Yeah.
Team Basham, 55. Naholo, 56.
Wow.
Rather brilliantly. Now, Jonah Holmes is pissed because he's 58.
Better than Naholo.
Better than Naholo, but also at 58 is Henry Slade.
Henry Slade, only just better than Tyler Morgan.
Just better than Tyler Morgan, and a lot worse than some players who think, because I'm going to end this with who you think is the highest rated player I could find in the game. So I'm just going to quickly run through, because those would be a forever. Jonathan Davis, you said, is 58. It's also the same as Sam Simmons. There's no rhyme or reason. At first I thought I was a little bit of bias towards like a certain country or a certain team. Nope. Lima Sopwanga is 60. Jack Willis, 61. Moriarty, Alaholo, Elliot D, 62. Irish second row, James Ryan, 63. Wall, get ready to be really pissed off. Jordan Lama and Aaron Wainwright was 64, and so was perhaps the greatest eight of his generation, or one of Talupe Faletau.
Wow.
64 for them. Corey Hill had the exact same rating as Danny Cipriani, Charles Olivon, and Cameron Walkie at 65. One less than Callum Sheedy at 66.
We've just worked out that these ratings were done by Ray Charles, yeah?
Xander Ferguson, Jake Pelleggi. Oh, I forgot Jake Pelleggi existed, rather weirdly, until I loaded this game up on Saturday. And I was like, oh shit, that was Jake Pelleggi, that injury. Xander Ferguson, Jake Pelleggi, Simon Zebo, and Liam Messam on 69. So we're still on the
same. Nice, by the way.
Liam Messam's like one of my favourite players to ever touch a rugby ball. 71, Corey Allen along is with Eben Estebeth and Brad Thayer.
Brad Thayer, who is, of course, better than Talupe Falatau.
Well, you think that's a good one. Next up, Tipperick only gets 72, which is the exact same score as James King.
Wow.
James King.
James King, 72, higher than Estebeth. Falatau. Just all
the only thing that's going to top all of this off is in a minute when you tell us that like Lloyd Ashley's like 94 or something ridiculous.
Wait, they're
going somewhere with this. Joey Carbery and Lloyd Williams are on 73 each. Josh Lewis, the Dragons 10 at the time, is 74. Being in mind we've already had this, the best, because we've got two famous second rows coming up on 75 in Rory Thornton and Macaulay Cook, which is the same score as George North. Finn Russell won here on 67. Then we, on 76 rather, 77, Alan Wynne Jones, Gareth Anscombe, and Ken Owens, which at least you go, oh, okay, we're sort of high 70s.
Yeah. It
still seems low. And then 3 points higher than that trio is Jaco van der Vaart, which is one less than Ben Earl and two less than Herring. Rob Herring.
Wow. I'm liking Jaco van der Vaart being above Finn Russell.
We still haven't got to Adam Hastings yet. So being in mind that the Billy 12 trees is 83, and that trio is the one that
you see Billy 12 trees is 83.
Is 83.
Shouldn't
it's not 30? It's not 36, yeah. I know what the
say, shouldn't he be 36, yeah.
being in mind that Welsh trio, next up another Welsh international with a couple of caps is Rhys Carey's 84. Hastings, Adam Hastings is next on 85. So 11 points higher than
I've
Finn
just
Russell.
Clocked. By this logic, Rhys Carey is nearly twice as good as Matteo Minozzi.
Yeah. And then we've been through a few lower rated blocks, but Jack Yendle is 85.
No.
That's just his age, though, isn't it? That's not the
yeah, record. Yeah.
Yeah, Jack Yendle in 2020 as well is scoring 85 out of 100.
Wow.
John Hill and Stuart McAnally are 86.
The thing is, that makes sense as a score on a normal scoreboard, but in normal context, way. That's bizarre.
Yeah. And then, like, the next three, I would say, make sense. Faf de Klerk is 88.
Yeah.
Completely normal. Cheslin Colby's 89.
Yeah.
And so's DuPont.
Yeah.
Right? And you think, well, surely that's then the highest score.
Sure. Right?
And then
you're going to say something ridiculous like they are lower than Owen Farrell and fucking George Ford, aren't you?
Well, they're lower than two people, and I'll come to that. Joint with them is Ian Henderson and Robbie Henshaw, right? Which again, I'd say they're in the 80s.
Rugby Pass is based in Ireland, I will have you know.
Yeah. But then I'm not going to give it
away. It's going to be Sexton. Isn't it?
You're going to
be Sexton's.
Are we guessing the highest rated player in the game then?
The two highest rated players in the game I could find.
Right, okay.
Scored 92 points.
So I'm guessing one of them has to be Beauden Barrett.
I don't think Barrett's on the game because there's no license for the All Blacks and there's no Super Rugby.
Okay. In that case, I can only assume that the highest rated player in the whole game, based on the metric system that you've given us so far, is Tonga fly half Ume Foster.
I would accept it more.
So I'm gonna go on the Irish theme. It's gonna be somebody out of.
If you get this right, I will buy you a drink on the Wales Australia game.
It's gonna be somebody out of Johnny Sexton, Tadhg Byrne, Conor Murray, in the top.
You reckon?
Yeah, one of those three will be in the top two.
I leave you all three guesses, and all three are wrong.
Yeah.
Furlong.
One is Jamie George.
Right. Okay.
Okay. Sure.
With 92 out of 100. Which is ludicrous. Ludicrous that he's the best player in the world.
Don't say the next one. Just give us the clue of the position and we can try and guess it.
Winger.
Jacob Stockdale.
More ludicrous than that.
Johnny May.
Darcy Graham.
More ludicrous than both. At the international level, more ludicrous than both.
Jonah Holmes.
I would say more ludicrous at the moment.
Andrew Conway.
So the clue I'm going to give you is this answer is going to infuriate everyone of every six nation country. Well, every country in the
Giovanni
world.
Giovanni Battista Venditti.
Do you want to know the answer?
Go on.
What country?
Ireland.
Jordan Lama. Go on. Who is it?
James Lowe. James Lowe.
It makes sense. He came from New Zealand, so they think, oh yeah, he's the best player in the world then. Who doesn't play for the All Blacks?
James Lowe is the greatest player that I can find. Real player.
Wow.
Rugby 20. He's 92 out of 100.
The only thing you can take from that whole thing is the fact the game was clearly made by somebody that James Lowe is belonging to and somebody that Rhys Carey is belonging to, because there's no way those two are that high.
Well, as Robbie put, that means that James Lowe is only, what are we talking, 2 points off being as good as two Ashton Hewitts.
You did just call me Robbie.
He did.
Oh,
he
no! Did.
Yeah, I stopped. I was like,
It's come full circle, and I wanted you to let you finish.
I almost
this is hysteria here.
At the start, because before we started recording, you said, and people call me Robbie, and it's been in my head, don't call him Robbie. Don't call him Robbie. And I've never called you Robbie before until you said
no, this is the first time. Like, it's okay, I let you off. I let you off.
I honestly, when we did the opening right up to the
Gav,
news,
don't worry about it. Don't worry about it, Gav. It's fine.
Yeah, Gav.
Right. We'll end there. I love going through them, and I had a list that was even longer of just people that they just wrote down that were so shockingly bad.
On that note, if ever you two want to lose to me at rugby video games, then you know, hit me up.
Well, I'm old enough that it's drawn along with rugby for me. Like that's still the pinnacle.
We've had many a battle and drawn along with rugby at Stefan's house, because I when he first had it, I didn't have that console. Right. And we would play for fucking hours.
Right. Yeah. Game. So I mean, fans of the Squid Rugby Channel, well, this isn't officially announced yet. Can be prepared for the fact we are going to do some content on the rugby games that are available, and I'm very excited to do that. So yeah, I can't say much more than that yet because it's not officially announced, but it's very exciting.
Hasn't he already played rugby with Alma Smith? Hasn't he already played
oh, rugby? Yeah, that's true, yeah. We did, so there's two videos on the channel of we played Rugby 20 together and we played the Mario and Sonic at the Olympic Games Rugby 7s mode.
Oh, that's amazing. Me and my son play that. And
right,
honestly,
yeah.
This carnage. I absolutely love the fact that when you see like some of the smaller characters just running and then just the bigger one just smash them.
It's
so incredible. I love that guy. And he's actually here with me now and he's laughing while I'm talking about it. So yeah, it's a fantastic game, that is.
So we'll move on then to wrap it all up because we've gone on even
later. this has gone on a while, but that's fine. I'm happy with that. I've enjoyed it.
Paulie's still packing, I think, to come to Wales tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm literally leaving to come to Wales in about 7 hours and I also have to sleep. So yeah.
Well, it's lucky that not Robbie wanted to come on earlier because we would have been
not Robbie.
Right, let's have winners and wankers. And so we'll start off with wankers to get us going.
Go sure.
On, we'll start us off.
So both Exeter and London Irish, for the fact that they played each other on the weekend. And so I decided, you know what? For the first time in like 7 years, I'm going to hope Exeter win this game. And they lost it. Like, how more wankerish can you get than that? For the one time I wanted them to win, and they just couldn't do it. When they win all the time when I don't want them to. Wankers, I tell you.
That's a great shout. I love that. Well,
absolute fucking knobheads that called out Holly Davison after her fantastic performance on Saturday.
Oh, I missed them, I think. Did I?
Oh, there was a lot.
Oh, there was that one guy who said about the players were all a bit too distracted by the leggy blonde in the middle.
Yeah, yeah. Specifically that person, yeah. That's
yeah. And also, while we're here, while we're talking about wankers on Twitter and stuff, a guy called Sam, who is constantly in myself, Robbie, you know, friend of the pod, Josh Gardner, all of our mentions constantly just trying to stick up for that London Irish 10.
Just remember, he's... He's not called Sam.
He's not a woman called Jackie.
No.
Jackie was suspended last I looked.
Oh, okay.
Which, you know.
But the thing is, I know that he hates the, you know, the lot of us so much that he will have listened this far into the podcast. So
yeah, 100%. He hates him so much. He continues.
So give us a shout, Sam, if you're listening, mate.
Yeah. Bye, bitch. If he's gone. My wankers for this week are Rugby Pass, for the obvious reason they ruined Rugby 20, but give us a hell of a quiz at the end. I was absolutely delighted with that one. Worst thing they've ever done, Rugby Pass. I subscribe to the XV. I think it's obviously, generally, it's brilliant output. And like, Will, your partner and so too. But yeah, keep
thanks,
it light.
Thanks,
they did ruin fucking Rugby 20 for me. And the refereeing in the Scarlets game, not even the refereeing, right? Because refereeing's fucking hard. Refereeing's really hard, especially at the elite level, I must imagine, because I've refereed lower down younger yeah. games, sort of like minis and junior level up to sort of 15s. And that's quite hard. That's quite difficult.
It is, yeah.
And that's without it being, you know, the intense atmosphere and a much higher pace. So I say, but when you're a TMO and you're presented with like replays from every conceivable angle and you can clearly see something happen, how can you get it wrong? And how do they keep getting it wrong? So that's what I'm most frustrated with. It's not referees so much as the all officiating teams, because TMOs
sure
pull their finger out. Like, it's as frustrating. I'm watching, I'm way behind the rest of the world. I've just started watching season 2 of Making a Murderer, and I'm frustrated watching that because I've got all the evidence is there. Let him. I've got the same thing watching rugby now. Just like, all the evidence is this.
Shouting at Making a Murderer. It passed the 22. It was Monty Ioane. He did it.
So yeah, that's what's the Ken Kratz? I mean, Ken Kratz coming up for an interview after the game where he's just like, we saw the evidence. And on a later note, let's have some winners from this week then. Start us off, Will.
Okay, so two. I mean, the first one of those two is both Alex Cuthbert and Rhys Priestland. The fact that they're back in the Wales squad, the Millennium Stadium crowds are going to love that, especially when they actually play well, you know. The second one I have down is not Carl Ferns, because I don't know if you saw his tweet after Newcastle lost to Gloucester.
That was class.
Which I will read out now. Loving the chat from all the standard Gloucester fans. One win and you all think you're world beaters. Enjoy the inevitable ninth place, which is an incredibly salty thing for a man who didn't even play.
Didn't he also call out a fan who was talking shit about him? Was that Carl Ferns this week?
Yeah. He's done plenty of that. Yeah.
Some guy who accused him of scurrying off. And you're like, yeah, Carl Ferns doesn't scurry. Carl Ferns does the exact opposite if he thinks things are kicking off.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I love Carl Ferns, like, with a passion. And he sent me a load of kit to raffle off the charity. He's been brilliant. So, I've seen that on site. And,
I found it hilarious. Yeah, it's great.
Some of the shit that he's tweeted, Ellis Genge was on form again this week.
Of course.
Calling out official Twitter account. So that was quite good as well. So yeah, good week on Twitter. But I love Carl Ferns.
Well, fair play.
I've got two, and funnily enough, one of them is actually also a tweet. our wonderful favourite English prop, Joe Marler, with his tweet this week, where he tweeted, Northbound M25, Clackett Lane Services, gents' toilets, avoid trap 4, very bad.
Okay.
And the other one was multiple friends of the pod, the Scottish Rugby Podcast, for their open letter to Glasgow Warriors this week. Fantastic work. Stand by everything that those lads are putting that in there as well.
Yeah.
Fully back them on it. And hopefully there's a bit of change there coming as well.
Well, I'm going to piggyback on one of your winners then, and I'm going to include Mary in that, who is, I think, Rugby Unicorn on Twitter, who absolutely slammed someone this week who tried to get involved in a discussion with clearly very little knowledge of anything to do with what they were talking about. And within a sort of 7-tweet thread, quickly realised how out of their depth they were.
Yep.
Because, and at no point was she aggressive, at no point was she sort of nasty. At no point was she cross any lines. Like, I'm quite quick to call people a dickhead on Twitter. I realized that I went through a long time of trying to explain to people who were dickheads, and then I realized, they're still dickheads. And so I just started calling them. But Mary's was brilliant, and the fact that the guy just sort of fucking evaporated. he's on an astral plane somewhere on the back of those. So that was absolutely superb for me. And Mary does a load of great work anyway. And I know that since I've known her, I'm more intelligent than I was. I mean, that's not hard, but I'm more intelligent than I was before I met her. And then my other winner, because I'm not sure when it came out, but it's certainly since we last recorded, Keith Earls.
Yep.
Keith is openly talking about his mental health issues.
Yeah.
I've said before how important I think it is. The last podcast we ended on, we had like a big down note on the back of the Sam Warburton Academy thing.
Yeah.
And then Keith Earls comes out that same week and shows exactly the impact that he can have talking openly and honestly about his mental health and what it meant. And like, that's so empowering to people. If you're a young Irish fan or a young Munster fan and Keith Earls is one of your favourite players and you're struggling with mental health issues and you talk like that, that can make a massive difference to someone's life. So super Keith Earls.
Who had down Keith Earls becoming more and more brilliant as the days go on?
I've got to be honest, that when he was younger, he was one of those players where I'm like, fucking Keith Earls, like,
yeah, I've got a lot of time for him now.
Yeah,
he grafts a lot more now that he's, you know, older, and it's great hearing him speak out about stuff like that.
Yeah.
I think, again, like, I've got to agree with you, he's a straight up winner, and I think that's a great closing note.
Yeah,
just want to add one, I think, similar to the way that he's spoken up is yesterday, the Kelly Brown interview as well, that was done on BT.
Yes,
similar to Keith Earls. So yeah, props to them both,
definitely.
Absolutely super. And so that's where we'll end it then, on a really good and passionate note. Well, as always, thanks for joining me. Will,
no problem.
I'll get your name right every time next time.
No, it's okay. Thank you for having me back, guys. I really appreciate that. And obviously, always happy to come join you guys. We always have a lot of fun doing this.
We love having you on. It's great. It always descends into madness at some point. Those guys on TV. Superb. And thank you to you for listening. If you've stuck with us this long, cheers.
Yeah, thanks, Sam. Yeah, appreciate that.
Cheers, Gav.
Ta-ra, Jackie. Bye.
You've been listening to Rock and Roll. If you've stuck with us this far, leave us a review, follow us not just here, but on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook and TikTok, and drop us a message. You're a pretty friendly bunch. It'll be great to hear from you no matter what you want to say. And we'll see you next time. Thanks very much for listening. Bye for now.